Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, April 11th, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. Our participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send questions, plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. And also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture is going to be out of Isaiah chapter 14. We're going to read verses 1 through 23. These prophetic books are actually parables. I'm not going to make any comment on any of this here, but just for people to understand, this is a parable concerning the end of time, particularly coming up towards Judgment Day itself. So again, Isaiah 14, verses 1 through 23. For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob, and will choose Israel, and set them in their own land, and the strangers shall be joined with them. And they shall cleave to the house of Jacob, and the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Lord for the servants and handmaids, and they shall take them captive, whose captives they were, and shall rule over their oppressors. And it shall come to pass in the day that Jehovah shall give thee rest from thy sorrow and from thy fear and from the hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve, that thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how hath the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased. The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the sepulchre of the rulers. He has smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke. He that ruled the nations in anger is persecuted, and none hindereth. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee, and the elders of Lebanon, saying, since thou art laid down, no fella is come up against us. By the way, the word fella means tree cutter, the old English fella, tree cutter. No tree cutter is come up against us. Hell from beneath is moved for thee, to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. He hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials, the worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners? All the kings of the nation, even all of them, lie in glory, every one in his own house. But thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch, and as a raiment of those that are slain, thrust through with a sword, that go down to the stones of the pit, as a carcass trodden under feet. Thou shalt not be joined with them in burial, because thou hast destroyed the land and slayed the people, and the seed of evildoers shall never be renowned. Prepare slaughter for his children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities. For I will rise up against them, saith Jehovah of hosts, and cut off from Babylon the name and remnant, and the son and the nephew, saith the Lord Jehovah. I will also make a possession for the bitten and pools of water. I will sweep it with the broom of destruction, saith Jehovah of hosts. Okay, that was a prophecy, again a parable, Isaiah chapter 14, verses 1 through 23. Okay, a lot of things going on tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about some concerns of people who are, of course, trying to change our course and veer us into different directions. Most of these people are people that were once memberships with us, but were removed from our roles. They had authority and abused that authority. And they have kind of bound together, and they're doing different things. And they seem to think it's a race of some kind to try to get somewhere or to do something, and they've made an ego thing out of it. But ultimately, these people really, I believe, it's my strong belief, that they're being handled by people in order to try to really destroy the plan that we have going. But we're going to keep the course and not allow that to hinder us. But these people have come into our room, somehow have gotten numbers of people that have come online and have called them trying to find out, you know, who is who and what numbers. They may have received the call or something, maybe trying to discover who you are and get some information and maybe even try to get you to go along with them. These people have set up a strange kind of a system, really, that is a subversion against the United States of America. They've set up judges. They've set up marshals, their own marshals. They have governors, and they even have, I believe they even have a president of the United States. I had heard that a long time ago, that they even have a president. They're setting up their own courts, and they are intent on trying to arrest people and to bring these people to some kind of a judgment outside of the judicial system that we, the people, have set up here in the federal court system or even in our state court systems. And I know they are trying to entice the militia to go forward with this, to be an enforcement for arresting these people. And the question we have to ask is, well, okay, if they arrest these people, where are they going to put them? In the basement of Denny's or something, or what? And this would be nothing short than kidnapping. And certainly this is subversion against the United States of America, trying to set up another government, a shadow government, some kind of a quasi-government. We have been trying to keep arm's length away from these people for a long time. They've tried to subvert us. They've tried to enter into us, to veer us into those directions. But we're going to stay the course and work towards the process of taking things back according to the processes of law. And I believe we are really chiseling away at the walls of Jericho, so to speak. And it's only a matter of time before they fall. We got some papers. They're not really perfected yet, but we do want to read them tonight, mostly because we're going to be moving on to other things over the next week or two. We've got a lot of things going on. You know, there may be some errors in these papers. I have not posted them yet. They will be posted as soon as we do get good copies. Again, some of this might change a little bit. But again, I think it's important for the people to know where we're at and what we're doing. And I think we would have to really call a special meeting to read these papers if we didn't do it tonight. So we're going to read it tonight. So again, forgiveness if we read and we find some errors in it. We have to correct it as we go along, and we'll, again, clean it up over the course of the next day. Our intention is to really get this out tomorrow, if possible, the next day at worst case. So right now it is dated for tomorrow, April 12th, both of these papers. One is a... It's a paper for a contempt of court directed particularly to the judiciary and to the offices out there in Oregon, the court offices, that is, out there in Oregon. So I'm going to read that first. And the second one is a cover letter for the judge, because we're going to send copies of this to all 36 Oregon sheriffs. And we will be following that letter and this paper up with a phone call to those sheriffs. And some of them, hopefully, we'll get on early on, and maybe we'll have some of the sheriffs making phone calls to other sheriffs. But they need to unite. They need to come together to do what has to be done, to not only protect the people of their state and to put these criminals that have taken control of our judiciary in jail, but also to assist and get the ball moving across America, where we need to get enforcement of all the sheriffs. So we're going to see how this goes, and then we'll be having conversations with these sheriffs concerning indictments. And as long as we know we can work out an arrangement to trust each other and to move forward with indictments and get enforcements, then it's going to begin. So that could happen quickly. Or it could take a little time, but it's the beginning of a movement forward. Okay, so this is being sent into the United States District Court for the District of Oregon. It's coming from the tribunal, which is the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And it's coming in this, which is before the people themselves, okay? I'm not going to read all the names, but we have quite a few judges in here. We've got the chief judge, a few magistrate judges. We have a chief clerk in here. We have the Harney County Sheriff David Gurlu, but he's retired, but he was in this process when this thing started with the Hammonds. We have a U.S. Marshal in here, and we also have some attorneys, and we have added the attorneys for the Hammonds in here. And, of course, you know, if they decide to come over to our side, we'll work with them. Fig Leaf is always, you know, available. The olive branch, I'm sorry. The olive branch is always available. Okay, so it starts off, you know, again, with the sureties of peace, we the people, the unified grand jury, and then the names of all the respondents. And it starts off, all respondents took an oath and when served with a habeas corpus had a moral duty to speak, but instead uniformly acted under color of law in an unprecedented move to quash due process. Because it is apparent to the grand jury that there is a blatant, widespread conspiracy among the respondents, U.S. Marshals, and other federal agencies, the Oregon judiciary has failed the people. And the only logical solution is to serve notification for enforcement to the county sheriffs. Silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. U.S. versus Tweel, and of course it gives the numbers and it quotes two or three other cases, the same quote. Copied via U.S. mail, information, preparation for enforcement, and then we name all of the sheriffs, Baker County Sheriff Travis Ash, Benton County Sheriff Scott Jackson, and so on, all 36 of them. I believe there are 36. I'm pretty sure that number is correct. After that paragraph, we then start with contempt of court. On December 31st, 2015, the grand jury, after being petitioned by an ex-friend, filed a habeas corpus, an unalienable right protected by the United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2. The privilege of writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. On behalf of Dwight Lincoln Hammond and Stephen Dwight Hammond, petitioners. On January 8, 2016, the grand jury filed an affidavit of default and a default judgment under seal. On January 8, 2016, the grand jury served a contempt of court with opportunity to amend to Chief Clerk Mary L. Morgan, who was directed by mandamus to provide proof of filing of habeas corpus and default under penalty of law in criminal violation of 18 U.S.C. 2071 and 18 U.S.C. 2076. Whereas on Monday, January 25th, 2016, the grand jury sent a jurist domiciled in Multnomah, I believe that's how you say it, County, Oregon, to retrieve copies of the time-stamped filings. The clerk was elusive as to the location or of the information papers that were filed by the grand jury via USPS certified. The grand jury was clear that failure of respondent to file and mail proof of the same constitutes a criminal act and contempt of court. U.S. 18 U.S. 2076, clerk is to file. Whoever being a clerk of a district court of the United States willfully refuses or neglects to make or forward any report, certificate, statement, or document as required by law, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. 18 U.S.C. 2071. Whoever willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, or destroys or attempts to do so, or with intent to do so, take and carry away any record, proceeding, map, paper, document, or book, or other thing filed or deposited with any clerk or office of the state officer of the state of the United States, or in any public office, or with any judicial or public officer of the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years, or both. 8 U.S. Code 1001, statements or entries generally. Whoever in any manner within the jurisdiction of an executive, legislative, or judicial branch of the government of the United States knowingly and willfully falsifies, conceals, or covers up by any trick, scheme, or device a material fact shall be fined under this title in prison not more than 5 years. 18 U.S.C. 1512b. Whoever corruptly alters, destroys, mutilates, or conceals a record, document, and or other object, or attempts to do so with the intent to impair, object, objects, integrity, or availability for the use of an official proceeding, or to otherwise destruct, obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceedings, or attempts to do so, shall be fined under this title in prison not more than 20 years, or both. Upon information received, Magistrate Judge Patricia Sullivan, Magistrate Judge Michael R. Hogan, and there's quite a few people, I'm not going to read all through them, conspired to conceal habeas corpus and did unlawfully remove, and by the way, we did include the Hammonds attorneys in here because they agreed and participated with the hiding of this document, with the removal of this document. This is unprecedented, by the way. Let me get back here. I'll start again. Conspired to conceal habeas corpus and did unlawfully remove the following papers from the court. File on demand, dated 12/31/15. Habeas corpus, dated 12/31/15. Habeas corpus default, dated 1/8/16. Clerk's contempt of court, dated January 27, 16. Mandamus to magistrate to show cause concerning proof of filing, dated January 27, 2016. Mandamus contempt of court with opportunity to amend their error and abate law at law immediately all proceedings as required by law in relation to case number 610CR60066 for failing to provide due process, dated January 29, 2016. The greatest danger to American freedom is a government that ignores the Constitution. In the unlawful expungement of the aforementioned papers, respondents made war against the Constitution, and therefore we the people. Respondents have no authority to ignore or remove the unalienable right of habeas corpus from the people. The abuse of government concerning this right was a major cause for the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson, in his first inaugural address, said, "Freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of person under protection of habeas corpus, and trial by juries, impartially selected, these principles form the bright constellation which has gone before us and guided our steps through an age of revolution and reformation." Moreover, by a declaration of rights, I mean one which shall stipulate freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of commerce against monopolies, trial by juries in all cases, no suspensions of habeas corpus, no standing armies. These are fetters against doing evil with which no honest government should decline. Again, that was Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson again, the habeas corpus secures every man here, alien or citizen, against everything which is not law, whatsoever shape it may assume. A government that ignores habeas corpus ignores due process. Thomas Jefferson said the greatest danger to American freedom is a government that ignores the Constitution. Therefore, this court, by its action, places liberty in jeopardy. Trial by jury in civil cases, trial by jury in criminal cases, and the benefits of the writ of habeas corpus all stand on the same footing. They are common rights of American. Richard Henry Lee. We must never cease to proclaim in fearless tones the great principles of freedom and the rights of man, which are the joint inheritance of the English-speaking world, and which through Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, the habeas corpus, trial by jury, and the English common law find their most famous expression in the American Declaration of Independence, Winston Churchill. Habeas corpus originated in England. Common law as a means to protect the individual from illegal detention. An individual who been held in custody could file a petition seeking a writ, which would require the custodian to provide adequate legal justification for the detention. In response to abusive detention of persons without legal authority, public pressure on the English Parliament caused them to adopt the Act of 1679, which followed an earlier habeas corpus act of 1640. Which established that the command of the king or the privy council was no answer to a petition of habeas corpus, which established a critical right that was later written into the Constitution for the United States of America. A writ of habeas corpus, literally to produce the body, is a court order to a person, prison warden or agency institution, and in this case, an unconstitutional lese prius court, holding innocent people in custody without due process of law, to deliver the imprisoned individual to the court or in issuing the order. A writ of habeas corpus cannot be denied. As clearly stated in the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, that enumerates the powers that Congress is forbidden from exercising, and therefore no judiciary can deny, in this case, Clause 2. The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be deferred. What more serious denial is there than for a servant judge to deny due process? There exists no legislative law to rest upon. There exists no latitude to interpret. Jurisprudence demands due process, yet the respondents continue in a blatant conspiracy of unprecedented resistance. Title 28, U.S.C. 2242, acknowledges that it is not the responsibility of the petitioner to know by what claim or authority the state acts, but that petitioner may inquire as to the cause of the restraint by habeas corpus. 28 U.S. C. 2243 states that a court, justice, or judge, tribunal, entertaining an application for writ of habeas corpus shall forthwith award the writ, or issue an order directing the respondents to show cause why the writ should not be granted. Civil Procedure Rule 55 activates the prisoner must be released under the entry of default, whereas we read, when a party against whom a judgment for affirmative relief is sought has failed to plea or otherwise defend as provided by these rules, and that fact is made to appear by affidavit or otherwise under seal, the clerk shall enter the party's default. And by the way, they did indeed default, and we did indeed enter under seal and by affidavit all the necessary paperwork concerning that default and procedure. Habeas corpus is a judicial process not open for debate. Presently, respondents tread upon liberties most noble, the writ of habeas corpus. Respondents took an oath to protect and serve the Constitution for the United States of America, all other acts, codes, statutes, etc., to the contrary, notwithstanding. Therefore, respondents can do nothing less than their duty and obey the law. This tribunal's final ultimatum. Respondents have been given ample time to respond appropriately and honorably. Respondents failed, and a default was in order. If the prisoners are not released, all those conspirators who continue to restrain the prisoners are guilty of rendering aid and comfort to subverts, false imprisonment, kidnapping, and wars against the Constitution, all of which are acts of high treason against the people. Therefore, an indictment of said perpetrators and arrest by sheriffs will be the appropriate action. Wait for it. Any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution of the United States, wars against the Constitution, and engages in acts of violation of the supreme law of the land, the judge is engaged in acts of treason. Cooper versus Aaron. High treason in English law, treason against the king or sovereign, as distinguished from petty treason, which might formally be committed against a subject. That's 4BL Steph. Oh goodness, I'm not even sure how to even say this, but anyway, that's a record of the Supreme Court. Treason consists of two elements: adherence to the enemy and rendering him aid and comfort. Kramer versus the U.S. Ordered and adjudged. This tribunal finds respondents in contempt of court. This court is gracing respondents with opportunity to amend error by releasing Dwight Lincoln Hammond and Stephen Dwight Hammond, providing proof of filing of the above said papers, timestamped, the title page of each of the aforesaid documents filed with the court, and mailing to the above address. Respondents have 7 days to obey, or the grand jury will consider indictments for the aforesaid and following charges. I'm not going to read all these charges, but I'm just going to just list them very quickly. There's quite a few of them. 18 U.S.C. Subsection 4, misprision of felony. 18 U.S.C. 1963, RICO. 18 U.S.C. 241, conspiracy against rights. 18 U.S.C. 242, deprivation of rights under color of law. 18 U.S.C. Subsection 872, extortion. 18 U.S.C. Subsection 1349, attempt and conspiracy. 18 U.S.C. Subsection 1622, subordination of perjury. 18 U.S.C. 22383, misprision of treason. I think that's repeated. One was misprision of felony. This is of treason. 18 U.S.C. 2384, seditious conspiracy. 42 U.S.C. 1983, civil action for deprivation of rights. 42 U.S.C. 1985, conspiracy to interfere with civil rights. 42 U.S.C. 1986, action for neglect to prevent. And then it's stated by the court, April 11, 2016. And again, if we don't get it out tomorrow, we'll get it out on the following day. Okay. I'm going to try to make this quick, and then we're going to move on to the rest of our programming, and we can talk about this when the time comes up. But we're sending this into the court, and of course to all the people involved here, and we're also going to send a copy to all 36 sheriffs, and we will be faxing starting the moment. As soon as we send this out, we're going to start faxing to all of the sheriffs in America, all 3,143 or whatever the number might be, somewhere around that neighborhood, sheriffs. And we'll also be sending them to marshal judges and I don't know, about 20,000 or more elected or appointed individuals in America. So everybody should know what we're doing, and again, one more assault against the walls of Jericho, so to speak. Okay, here's the letter that's going to be going out to the with this paper to the sheriffs, and it starts off, "Dear Sheriff." And again, now this here letter, I was just trying to clean up right before the program started, and I may not have got it all together yet, and of course you really don't know until you read it out loud, you know, where the improper English and different things are, but we'll do the best we can. But I think it's important to make these points to let everybody know what we're doing, and we need to start gearing up and getting ready to do the necessary things, being prepared. Okay, dear Sheriff, you are receiving a copy of contempt of court concerning the Hammonds case because the federal judiciary in Oregon State has failed the people. The genius of the American Republic is its judiciary system, when free to properly function. Thomas Jefferson put it simply while writing the Kentucky Resolution of 1798, where he was quoted, "In questions of power, then, let no more be heard of the confidence of man, but bind him down for mischief by the chains of the Constitution." He was speaking of this in the context of the right of the people to implement nullification in and out of the court. We, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, have been communicating with all 3,132 county sheriffs in an effort to enforce the law and thereby save America. Because if all our elected and appointed servants obeyed the law of the land, we would have the government our founding fathers envisioned, a prerogative today stolen from the people by a criminal judiciary. If you have been reading our communications to you, it would now be evident that the beginning of the process of any case rests with we the people in the name of grand jury, petty jury, or tribunal, and the only lawful law enforcer, the county sheriff. It was never intended that all indictments go through a prosecutor. This was a ploy by the bar to move control of all criminal cases under bar control, and thereby providing protection and cover for subverts. The prosecutor's job is to prosecute by convincing the people, that is the petty jury, of the person's guilt in a court of law. The sheriff's job is to secure a due process arrest by simply asking the people, that is the grand jury, if it's okay. The magistrate's or judge's role is to certify, that is to notarize, the judicial process. He is not to interfere with the due process, with the process. He has no judgment role in the process at all. The only judge in common law is the tribunal, also known as the jury. If a judge refuses to certify, that is to notarize, the covenant between the people and the sheriff, that is concerning, of course, an indictment, he is in violation of the law and subject to arrest. Under our system, all prisoners are to be delivered to the sheriff by his deputies or corporate police, whereas the sheriff is now responsible to secure an indictment before delivering the prisoner over for trial. If the case is a homicide, it is delivered to the coroner to make the determination and secure an indictment if necessary in conjunction with the sheriff. Even the prosecutors are to defer to the sheriff. The people are not to be the prosecutors or some judge's puppet. History does not recall the prosecutor calling for the jury. This is not to say they can't speak to the grand jury on behalf of the government. After all, anyone should have access to a sitting grand jury. The first known recorded grand jury assembled themselves out of the people, see Magna Carta. History recalls a symbiotic relationship between the people and the sheriff, and most often called by the sheriff and or the coroner. The BLM, which is a federal agency controlled by the executive branch, is engaged in intimidating ranchers, miners, and loggers, going as far as starting fires that burn down homes and livestock, and most recently killing and imprisoning those who stand up to these thugs, all in an effort to move them off their land in order to lease and or sell America's rich resources to foreign interests, such as China and Russia. Congress held hearings in 2014. I'm not sure that was 14 or 13. I got to check that. I think it was 14. But anyway, Congress held hearings in 2014 concerning these land grabs and acknowledged that the BLM is using intimidation, extortion, and other organized crime tactics. Congress had the opportunity to stop these fascist activities by simply cutting off congressional funding to the BLM, but failed to do so. The administrative branch ordered a top FBI negotiator to Burns, Oregon, moving the FBI to take full command and jurisdiction of the event in Burns, Oregon, by seizing control of the sheriff's office, and in orchestration with Governor Kate Brown took control of the state police. The FBI then orchestrated the assassination of Lavoie Finicum and the arrest of others. The U.S. Marshals have been reported as following supporters of the occupiers of the Mulnor Refuge in Oregon after a court hearing. One of the marshals present at the hearing was asked if he had taken an oath to the Constitution. The marshal replied that he had taken several oaths and went on to say that he was a manhunter. The judiciary is ignoring the Constitution and denying due process, which is what the attached paper and the exhausted work of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is all about. Our government has failed, we the people, because organized crime has seized control of key government positions. And now it is up to the people working with its last line of defense to stop this criminal disease that has gripped America, by simply understanding and applying the law of the land. There is nothing wrong with our government. The problem lies with the criminals controlling it. The problems out west are plaguing we the people in every state of the union under the name of Agenda 21 and by bar-initiated and controlled mortgage frauds. America is under siege from enemies both foreign and domestic, federal agencies like the BLM. America is heading for an armed revolution, with the county sheriff working with we the people, who can prevent it by simply working together and enforcing the law of the land. We the people, through the United States Common Law, Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, are in the process of indicting the very people who are preventing the implementation of the law of the land. And we are now turning to the sheriffs for enforcement. We can only accomplish our goal to save our republic if the sheriffs in each state band together with we the people to enforce the law. We will be contacting all Oregon sheriffs by phone, either directly and or through other Oregon sheriffs, to initiate the reinstating of our Constitution as we copy and fax and email other sheriffs across the nation and prepare them also for the initiation of arrests in their states. Once arrests are made, we, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, will deliver the paper to one of the federal district magistrate judges for signature, which will implement the trial process. If met with resistance, an arrest will be initiated, and we will turn to the next magistrate. We will have success as soon as they, that is the judges, understand we mean business. Sealed, dated April 12, 2016, signed by the grand jury foreman. Okay, so that is the letter that's going to accompany the paper, which we plan to send out tomorrow. And by the end of the week, we should hope that every elected and appointed individual on federal and state level will have a copy of it. And of course, we will start initiating the phone calling and communicating with these sheriffs. Now, as I mentioned a little earlier, there are forces trying to move things in a different direction. There are forces trying to move things really to actually get a war going is what they're looking to do. Nothing short of that. And if the militia is listening now, and we will be trying to get in contact with them. I know we're in that process right now to reach out to talk to some of them to get the word out. If they could go forward with these people, these insane people who think that they're going to convince the militia to go arrest some people, which is kidnapping, and bring them over to a quasi, shadow government, which is indeed, even to us, we the people, is subversion against the United States of America, they're going to start a war. They need to cease and desist from that kind of action and let the judicial process take its course. Let the sheriffs do their job. Let the people come together and do what is necessary to save this nation, because only we, the people, working with those elected individuals who are willing to work with us, and particularly and specifically the sheriffs, only we can save America. And once we apply the law and enforce the Constitution in every court in America, we will then have accomplished the goal 100% of the saving of America. And from that point forward, it's just a matter of cleaning house. And that'll be up to the people with a sober mind, coming with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And we need to teach that. And once this thing process gets moving, we will hit that point where many, many droves of people will be coming in. And it's up to us to make sure we remain honorable and not become them. It's up to us to make sure this doesn't become a vindictive movement just out of anger and hate, but that we move with a sense of honor, and that we move with a sense not only of justice, but also always considering mercy. Because if we're not merciful, and at least consider mercy, mercy may not be available to some people. We may consider the mercy and say, nope, not available for this guy. Forget about it. That's honorable to come to that conclusion, but it must be considered. We must be sober, and we need to do this the right way. Okay, with that pretty much ends that, what I've got. Just real quick, Gary, do we have any questions that are coming in that we might want to answer before we move on to Brent? Gary, you're muted if you're talking, so or any other host that might know of any questions that we may have in out there from came through the email?
I don't have any.
Okay. I presume we don't have any then. All right, let's move on to Brent. Brent, you should be able to just hit star six and take up the mic, and I'll mute out for a while. I'm not sure what your conversation is going to be about tonight, but you got the mic. Star six, unmute, and talk. We'll let you know if we hear you. Right now, we don't hear you. Brent, are you there?
Star yes. Six? Can you
there
advise
you
if you
got
you got okay. me?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, maybe you can tell us your subject. This is Brent Winters. He is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. Brent, go right ahead.
Thanks. I appreciate, again, you letting me come on. And I, like some others on this call, want to see things brought back to sensibility without some of the outlandish methods that I hear about. I was once in politics in another life, and I remember at that time I was running for U.S. Congress, and we heard stories about a fellow down in the Caribbean. I believe his name was Aristide, and at that time he was popular for what he called and others called the Golden Necklace, and he ruled the country by putting old tires around people's necks he didn't agree with and lighting the tire on fire, and it was an ugly form of execution. His cabinet, I saw a picture of them assembled once, and the members of his cabinet had mohawk haircuts, piercings all over their body, this has been 20 years ago, tattoos on their faces, etc. And people in America were saying, well, we're not like that. Well, we're getting to be like that. A government bureaucrat came to a client's house not long ago that looked like one of the cabinet members of Aristide's presidential cabinet. Now, that's not really the problem, the way people look. That's an indication of something going on in the head that may not be exactly right, that may indicate that these folks are operating by another law. And if they're operating by another law besides the one that I think is the good one here and that our country has always traditionally held to, or operating by a law other than our United States Constitution, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, those two volumes, well, then they're operating by another God. Because if there's a different fundamental law, there's a different God, then if it isn't the true God, I guarantee you, it's not going to be a good result in the end for freedom. The only remedy, as we always say and continue to say, the only remedy to lawlessness is law. The only remedy to lawlessness is law, and I can't do much over the telephone except talk about the true law. And I want to make a point, again, to say something about averting violence. The answer to the militia problem is that our state legislatures need to do their duty under the Constitution, which they've ignored now for about 175 years, do their duty under the Constitution and pass a constitutionally mustered militia act that meets constitutional muster. A militia act, that's the duty of every state according to the four militia clauses of our Constitution. And if our state legislatures will but do that, that will give an outlet for some people, able-bodied, to bear arms, to bring balance to the madness in a way that will avert the violence that those holding the levers of power appear to be trying to incite people to, the confusion, the madness, again, the lawlessness of what's going on, and it can only lead to something worse. One more comment. So many things have come up. Somebody called me just before I got on, had emailed, and I thought it had been somebody that had heard me speak over this particular venue, but it wasn't, and they were talking about grand juries and what they were going to do, and I discerned from the conversation that this fella was being asked to do things that I advised him were dangerous, that he should not do. Probably find out more about it, but he did express some concern. But there are a good many folk out there that are willing to agitate as provocateurs, whether they're officially working for the evil empire or whether they're just on a leash. I've seen the government put men and women on leashes where they would get a federal indictment against them or a federal injunction, and then the prosecutor would never prosecute them and just let them go do whatever they want or what they did best. And, of course, the government liked what they were doing because it drew people out of the woodwork that the government wanted to have a good reason to nab, and sometimes that works. And then when they're done with such useful idiots, then they put them away for as long as they want or convict them of some terrible thing, whether right or wrong. So it's dangerous out there, and the only remedy to lawlessness and the danger that comes with it is law. So we want to talk a little bit about habeas corpus. Not too much can be said. It is obscure to people. And a while ago, John talked about some of the details of the doctrines of it, and that was good, of course. I thought, well, maybe I can talk about a couple of real-life situations that would make it more understandable. Habeas corpus sounds rather ostentatious because it's a fancy Latin word, and it means, as was said a while ago, I'll repeat it. I'm not a scholar of Latin either, but I try to deal with it when I have to. It means we have, or we shall have, or you ought to bring us the body. Habeas, we have. Corpus, body. Bring the body before the court. Bring the body of the prisoner. Now, in England today, they don't even do that anymore. They just go into court and argue it, and the prisoner sits in jail. Now, we still, at least in doctrine, are supposed to do that. I'll talk about two cases, one of them in England and one in the United States, earlier habeas corpus cases. One's a case about a fellow named Somerset. His name was Somerset. I say Somerset, they'd probably say Somerset. He was a slave. He was a slave that lived in the colony of Virginia, and his, quote, end quote, owner, for lack of a better word, I still maintain it's impossible, utterly impossible for one man to own another, but people have claimed to do that in the past. Well, he took this slave that he claimed to own to England, and when he got to England with his slave, somebody there filed a writ habeas corpus for him. Well, he absconded first. In other words, he got to England. The slave said, this is a free country, I'm leaving. The government went after him and jailed him, and a friend filed a habeas corpus on behalf of this fella by the name of Somerset. Well, eventually, of course, the case got before the famous justice, Lord Mansfield, by the way of some people call him the father of the universal uniform commercial code, the UCC. He was certainly instrumental in the principles of it. But Mansfield gave his prejudgment remarks concerning habeas corpus, and courts do this sometimes today. They give you their tentative ruling, and I'm going to quote from his tentative ruling. He said this. This is the British judge. He was actually a Scotsman by the name of Murray, but he held the title Lord Mansfield. He said, a slave, according to American law, we cannot at any of these points direct the law. The law must rule us. That's good doctrine. Listen to him again. We cannot at any of these points direct the law. The law must rule us. That means a government of law, not of men. Then he found this when he ruled on the case. He said, the state of slavery is so odious, that means burdensome, that nothing can be suffered to support it but positive law. Positive law. That means a positive statement, means a statute or legislation. What he's saying here is you can't find it in the law unwritten, our common law, the law of the land. You can't find it. And he said, finding nothing in judicial precedent, the common law, or the acts of Parliament, positive law, recognizing slavery on English soil, and he didn't, and so he discharged this fellow from Virginia, this slave by the name of James Somerset, and declared him free, because he said slavery had never existed on the Isle of Britain, because even though people did claim to have slaves there, but he said as a matter of law it never existed, because it was unlawful, because our common law, the law of the land, the law of nature, and of nature's God, our declaration says, the law of nature is the common law. It was not permitted. Well, this case, Jeff, of Somerset came to America, and I tell you this on my personal testimony. I was in courthouse in Coles County, and searching through papers in that place in the old courthouses that's made of steel. A steel room in the center where the records are to guard them from fire, records of land ownership, birth, death, inheritance, things like that, having to do with property rights. I was in there, and a fellow was looking at an old document that he had dug out, and I asked him what it was, and he said that it was the order of the court in the case, in the Matson slave case, the Matson slave case. And I looked at it, and it indeed was the order written out by hand as they did in those days from the year 1847. And it was the case of five slaves, a woman and her four children, and their owner, purported owner, a fellow by the name of Matson, lived in Bourbon County, Kentucky. And he owned a large farm up on the black dirt on the prairies of Illinois near Oakland. He went up there every year and farmed. He'd cross the river, come north with his slaves, five of them, and they would plant, and then he'd go home, and they'd come back, and he left one slave there who was the husband of the woman he'd bring up with him. He was the caretaker of the place, and he'd come up there and harvest in the fall. Then he'd go back, take everybody back in the winter, the man's wife and four children back down to Bourbon County, Kentucky. Well, he got up there one year, and the housekeeper that was there was white. She was an Irish woman, an immigrant from Ireland. And her, this black slave, and this Irish servant got in a fight. And this Irish servant said that she had influence with the owner, a fellow by the name of Matson, and she was going to talk him into shipping her name was Mary Bryant, ship her down the river. Well, that scared Mary and her husband too. They didn't know what to do. They knew this woman did have some influence, or they thought she did, with Matson. Who knows what was going on there? But she took up her four children and fled to a nearby village 9 mile away in Coles County called Ashmore. A man by the name of Gideon Ashmore owned the inn there. It's still called Ashmore. And Ashmore hid him. Well, he eventually got scared, and he transferred them back up to Oakland to a well-off doctor's house, a guy by the name of Rutherford, and he hid them there in his house. Well, the owner, Matson, went to the sheriff of Coles County and talked him into going and getting the slave, finding them and bringing them back, because he knew where they were, and he'd tried to talk Doc Rutherford into giving them back, and he wouldn't. So the sheriff came and said he had to have them, and so he took them back to the courthouse and put them in the jail until further deliberations were made, whatever was going to happen concerning them. Now, we're talking about habeas corpus, keep in mind. Well, Rutherford, the doctor, he went to town, went to Charleston, and looked for somebody to file a habeas corpus for these five slaves, a habeas corpus for freedom. And he went to Abraham Lincoln, who happened to be in town at the time. Lincoln said he couldn't help him because Matson had already approached him, and he had taken him in confidence. Although he did reject the case, he'd told him some of the facts. So Lincoln couldn't take the case. Well, as it turned out, Lincoln ended up representing the slave owner in the case. And a fellow by the name of Linder on the other side represented the five slaves. Well, the case drew a lot of attention, and two justices from the Supreme Court traveled to Charleston to hear the case, habeas corpus. Well, the slaves were bodily brought before the court, just as habeas corpus means, the phrase habeas corpus, we have the body, bring the bodies of the prisoners before the court. The court issued the writ of habeas corpus to the jailer, which was Sheriff Hutchison. He's the jailer. And the sheriff produced Jane Bryant and her children before the court to show the court lawful cause for having jailed them. And if he didn't show lawful cause, the habeas corpus required that they be released immediately on the spot. Well, as it turned out, arguments were made. Abe Lincoln argued for the slave owner, argued weakly according to the witnesses that were there, and the case went in favor of the slaves. And the argument that was put forth on their behalf for the unlawful jailing of the slaves was that the land in America, and this is the origin of what is called the free soil doctrine. They said the land in America, and specifically where they were then sitting in that court, was free soil, just like the land in England. And they argued the Somerset case from England. They argued that just as Somerset left Virginia, which was a slave state, and went to England, which was free soil, therefore Somerset could not be a slave. As soon as his foot, the doctrine of the common law was this, as soon as a person's foot touched the soil of the island of Britain, he was ipso facto and forever free, regardless of his former condition of servitude, whatever it may have been. Well, they took that case, and they said that walks on all fours. That's just like this case. He was in Kentucky, a slave state, and he crossed the river over into Illinois, which is a free state. Therefore, the soil here is free. And as soon as those slaves' feet touched the soil, they were ipso facto, as a matter of law, forever free, regardless of their former condition of servitude. The chains fell off upon touching the soil. Well, the judges agreed. They disagreed with Abe Lincoln, and they agreed with the attorneys, Linder and the other fellow, I believe his name was, for the slaves. And this is the order that I saw in the Coles County Courthouse. I copied it. And by the way, it's in Chapter 3 of my book, Excellence of the Common Law. And you can read it there, and all about the Somerset case and the fascinating details of the case in Illinois, the Matson slave case. But the court said this, 16 October 1847, in certification of freedom from slavery, I'm quoting, now at this day come the said applicants and presented by Gideon M. Ashmore their petition for the writ of habeas corpus directed to Lewis Hutchison, Esquire, Sheriff of Coles County, held them in custody, and the court being satisfied in the premises, ordered the said writ to issue, returnable forthwith. You see, that's the writ of habeas corpus. They petitioned the court for it. That means you ask the court to issue the writ, and if they grant it, they'll issue it to the custodian of the jail or the jailer, in this case a sheriff, whoever's holding the people, demanding that he bring the bodies of those jailed people before the court. That's what he's saying here. We issued the writ returnable. That means returning with the bodies of the prisoners forthwith. Before His Honor Chief Justice Wilson, assisted by the Honorable Justice Sam Treat, Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, and the said writ having been returned, and the said Lewis Hutchison, Sheriff, having returned upon the said writ, the causes of capture and detention with the said Negroes into court, and the cause coming on to be heard after testimony, adduced and argument had, and the court being satisfied what judgment to render herein, it is finally considered and adjudged that the said applicants, Jane Bryant, Mary Jane Bryant, Mary Catherine Bryant, Sally Ann Bryant and Robert Noah Bryant be discharged from the custody, as well of the said Lewis Hutchison, sheriff, as of Robert Matson, owner, and all persons claiming by them, through and under him as slaves, and they be and remain free and discharged from all servitude whatsoever to any person or persons, henceforth, forward, and forever. And it's signed, and of course, Robert Matson, the owner, was demanded to pay cost, and he quietly got on his mare and hightailed it back to Kentucky and didn't pay a thing. That's the way the case ended. But that's a real-life case of habeas corpus. Nothing has changed. Nothing. As a matter of fact, habeas corpus is of greater importance by 1,000, 100,000, million times more than it was then, and it's at the forefront of everything now. We jail more country, more people in our country per capita than any country in the world, including communist China and even Russia. And habeas corpus is now limited by statute of limitations, according to Congress anyway, to 1 year from the time of jailing in the federal system. Everything that can be done is being done to curtail the power of habeas corpus. And the only way to keep habeas corpus alive is to use it. You don't use it, you lose it. We talk about freedom of speech, freedom of religion, etc., freedom of association, all sorts of freedoms, and get much attention. But who's talking much about habeas corpus? It is indeed quiet and powerful. And without it, there is absolute tyranny. Because a man or woman may be in prison, thrown in jail, whether, as I'd said before, by a hospital, or, as in the case here, by private parties, by enslavement. And without habeas corpus, there is no mechanism to put legs on the right to be free from false imprisonment. Free from false imprisonment. Oh, we can file an action for false imprisonment. Now, that's a civil action. That's something you can sue for in a non-criminal case. But what we're talking about here is filing to release somebody, and you can go after them criminally later if you want. But the thing here is to release people that are jailed without law. That's what's happening. And there are plenty of cases on the books. You can go and read about it. The suspension of the writ of habeas corpus becomes the next question. And it was tested heavily, this power to suspend habeas corpus, during the war between the northern and southern tiers of states. And Justice Taney of the Supreme Court he was Supreme Court Justice, but he was sitting as a district judge, as Supreme Court justices still do sometimes. And a Maryland militiaman was jailed without a trial. And the writ of habeas corpus issued from the federal district court under Justice Taney there in Maryland, demanding that the President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, and the general at the army barracks where this Merryman was being held, his name was General Caldwalder, that he produce the body of this prisoner before the court and show cause for lawfully having jailed him. Well, Caldwalder, the general, got the writ from Justice Taney. And he had to make a decision. Do I obey the orders of the President of the United States, or do I obey the law? And there's a difference. And he decided that he would obey the orders of the President of the United States. There's the ignorance, in some cases ignorance, in some cases willful, in some cases not, of military officers. He decided not to. And so the man languished in jail. But Justice Taney said this. It is in response, and he wrote his opinion, it is essential to the safety of every government that in a great crisis there should be power somewhere of suspending the writ of habeas corpus. That's what Lincoln did, see. He put it on hold, and he said he was justified in doing so. Listen to Taney. He goes on. The Constitution goes no further. It does not say, after a writ of habeas corpus is denied a citizen, that he shall be tried otherwise than by the course of the common law. If it had intended this result, it was easy by the use of direct words to have accomplished it. The illustrious men who framed the Constitution limited the suspension to one great right and left the rest to remain forever inviolable. But, and that great right of suspension, of course, he's talking about is habeas corpus, but it is insisted that the safety of the country in time of war demands that this broad claim for martial law shall be sustained. If this were true, says Justice Taney, it could be well said that a country preserved at the sacrifice of all the cardinal principles of liberty is not worth the cost of preservation. Happily, it is not so. Martial law, says Justice Taney, can never exist where the courts are open and in the proper and unobstructed exercise of their jurisdiction. That's the common law jurisdiction, you see, he references. It is also confined to the locality of actual war. The whole country, Justice Taney is saying, cannot be a military district. That's Ex parte Milligan of the year 1866. Well, Lincoln had begun his term as this fellow sitting in the White House. I hesitate to call him president. I don't believe he's qualified. He's sitting in the White House. He claims the power to arrest, to jail, to kill anyone he believes in his imperious breath may be a threat to the United States. No due process. President Lincoln began his term of presidency with unprecedented suspensions of the writ of habeas corpus. He authorized the suspension of habeas corpus 8 times from April 27, 1861 to 2 December 1861. And at first, the suspension was controlled by the Secretary of State. That's a scary thought. Today, 864 persons were imprisoned without trial during the first 9 months of the war. And remember, the war didn't occur everywhere. It occurred most battles of the war, more than any other state, were in Tennessee. But there were none in some states, many states. But that's where the writ was often suspended. 864 persons during the first 9 months of the war, and the number of arrests greatly increased in the next year, 1862, when the Secretary of War was given the responsibility to imprison who he thought he ought to. And maybe there's one other thing I should mention before I quit. I'll just read to you, to give you a color, and then we'll be done, of a writ of habeas corpus. This is a writ of habeas corpus. I'm going to read from it. This was issued by Justice Taney to General Caldwalder in the Merriman case. It wasn't very long. This is the writ of habeas corpus. It says this: District of Maryland, to wit, the United States of America, to General George Caldwalder, greeting. You are hereby commanded to be and appear before the Honorable Roger B. Taney, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, at the United States Courtroom in the Masonic Hall in the city of Baltimore on Monday, the 27th day of May, 1861, at 11 o'clock in the morning, and that you may have with you the body of John Merriman of Baltimore County, and now in your custody, and that you certify and make known the day and cause of the caption and detention of the said John Merriman, and that you then and there do submit to and receive whatsoever the said justice shall determine upon you and concerning you on his behalf according to law. And you have then and there this writ. Witness the Honorable R.B. Taney, Chief Justice of our Supreme Court, Tom Spicer, Clerk, issued 26 May, 1861. You see, it's just simply an order. A writ is an order. A writ is an old word, an old Anglo-Dane word from England, and it means a command from a greater to a lesser in writing. A writ. It is a writ. And that was a writ of habeas corpus I just read to you. It is an order to the custodian, the jailer, to bring the body of the prisoner before the court. Well, you can find me at commonlawyer.com. You can find my books there. You can find them at amazon.com. And the one I was reading from here has that chapter on habeas corpus in England and America and kind of traces the history of it. You can find it there at amazon.com. And you can find the Winter's Annotated Bible, a common lawyer translates from the original tongues and comments 24,000 footnotes to the Bible. That's the laws of nature's God. And our common law is the law of nature. And I appreciate you again asking me to come and letting me talk a little bit to you. And I think, John, if there's anything else, if you have something else you want to entertain questions as before, I'm willing to do that for a while.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. All right. We'll open up the Q&A for questions for Brent. Give me a second here to click the button. Q&A. And we'll see you come in, and we'll unmute you. Anybody with questions for Brent? Again, star 6 to get into the Q&A now. Usually it's flooded by now, but should have had it on a little earlier. Nobody in the queue yet, so star 6 to come into the queue. Okay, we have a first individual. All right, let's take our first question. Let's see. It is looks like Linda. 978 area code. Linda, go right ahead. Your question for Brent or comment.
Hi. Thank you so much for these meetings. My question is, in the paperwork that I printed out from your site that you sent to the government officials, in several of them it says that the press has a responsibility to alert. So I'm wondering if they've formally been sent anything. And I'd also like to know the second part of that is how can the general public that's on this phone call, how can we help you move the paperwork, get the paperwork out properly?
Okay, you're asking those questions of me, I guess, instead of Brent. You're concerning the papers that we had written read a little earlier?
Brent, or Brent, for historically, how did they get the press
to
move
okay.
on?
Go right ahead.
Well, go ahead, John. That's more of a contemporary problem that you're dealing with. I'm not...
Right. Yeah, we do send everything that we do out to the press. I forget how many we have. Goodness, and I think a couple of thousand we send out, throughout the United States. A lot of local papers, and of course all the major papers and the major networks and things of that sort. But they, to our knowledge, we haven't heard of them printing anything that we've. Sent to them, so we don't know where that's going to go. We do have a couple of people who are reporters out working, I believe, with a couple of the families that we're dealing with. I don't want to bring that up at the moment, any names or anything, and who are actually getting some word out into some local papers and maybe even out onto the wire. And at some point in time, we'll be talking with these people. They're interested in talking with us and to start getting our story out. Right now it's word of mouth, getting people together, and really we're trying to get as many members as possible in National Liberty Alliance. We have over 5,000 members right now, but we do know from watching the hits that we have hundreds of thousands of people that are following us and coming from time to time to the website. We get a tremendous amount of hits. But our membership is a little over 5,000. And the more people we get behind us, when we hit that critical mass, that point when people are really, really pressing hard and we get the sheriffs working with us, and I think the sheriffs working with us will probably, at that point, force critical mass because there are so many people watching. And they want to see something done. They want to do something. And when they see the movement of something really being done, that's when I think they'll pile on. So, it's really in God's hand. We don't really worry too much about it, but we are... We're conscious of it, and we wonder about it, but we let God handle that part. Hopefully that answers your question, if that question was veered to what we're doing here.
For following up with your paperwork that you're going to be sending out, the general people on this call, how can we help you to get that paperwork out, or is donation?
Oh, yes. Look at absolutely. Look at everyone. Everyone should get involved on the meetings we have during the week. Someone's going to have to correct me on this. I think it has been, is it Thursday nights? When is the meetings for the federal district leadership?
That's on Wednesday.
Wednesday night? Okay, Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in this room, for 1 hour, we come together for organizing and for getting people to do these kind of things. And we'll be talking with them about the matter of fact, we started talking with them in the last meeting about contacting sheriffs and getting involved with the letters and different things. And this is what we need them to be doing. So we will be discussing that on Thursday. So join us, anybody. Everybody should now get involved in this. We need the leadership. We're pulling together all our state coordinators. We're looking down into the county organizers. We're enticing and pushing people into the idea of going out into their local communities, their counties, next door counties, and so on, to talk to liberty groups and bring them into the work that we're doing here. And also we're pushing the Committee of Safety, which is a new thing we're assisting people with, to get committees of safeties in every town in America. We got a lot of things going, and so really everybody should join us on that effort, please. Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in this room. But go ahead.
Thank you. May I ask one last question? And that is, last Thursday, I believe, you had the sheriffs on, and it was a fabulous call. And I have not been able to find that on the website, so I'm just wondering if you post those or if those are just an internal thing and you don't have them.
Which meeting? The Thursday meeting, the Saturday meeting, or the Monday
meeting? It was a Thursday meeting. It was with sheriffs. They were talking about the committees of safety.
John.
And,
yeah, where are they posted at? Gerard, do you know?
Well, you were going to clean it up. That was the one that took so long to get.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was thinking of putting that right in with the Monday meetings and just put it in between some Mondays. Yeah, I'll clean that because there was a lot of stuff going on in and out that, you know, some problems and so on and working logistics or whatever. But I'll clean it up. I'll talk with Gerard about getting a hold of it. And I think, did we going to post that Saturday meeting too? Were we going to do that?
I think they're good. I think they're good for people to hear.
Yeah, I think we had to clean that one up, too. There's a lot of just stuff in between.
Right.
I don't remember, but we'll listen to it. We'll work it out, and we will get it up on the Monday page. So if you click on the top left side, which is a weekly call, on that page where you get the instructions to join us here, down below you will find all of our Monday programs. And in between, occasionally, you'll find something during the week. We've had some emergency meetings over the years, and then, of course, these kind of meetings, which we'll be posting in there, too. So we'll post them there, and we'll put a label on it so you'll be able to know what they were about and find them easy. Okay?
Fabulous. Thank you. Massachusetts is coming alive. I was walking by a group of women, and they actually mentioned us, and I was elated. So I just wanted to let you know that it is where I am in Massachusetts. It is coming ever so slightly, slowly but surely, it's growing. So more power to you. Thank you very much.
Okay, great news. Thank you, Linda. Okay, let's take our next caller. It's a New York call, 212. I guess that's New York City. If you can give us your first name, and I presume you're New York City, right?
Yeah, it's actually, I'm in outside of New York City. It's a cell number.
What's your first name?
Danny.
Okay, so Danny from New York. Maybe one of the moderators could find this number, the 212 number, and put Danny from New York. But go ahead, Danny.
Okay, great. Yeah, as far as Brent, it was?
Brent Winters, he's on the line with us. Your question or comment to him, go right ahead.
Yeah, he was speaking of habeas corpus, and you gave some history on it. How does that relate I'm in the family court dispute right now. How does that work in family court? Do you have any idea?
Well, only if there's somebody in jail or somebody imprisoned or confined someplace and they can't get away, they're held there by force, then habeas corpus can apply to their situation. But if there's not
child
habeas
that
corpus,
was wrongly taken from me, there was no neglect petition brought against me. And
right, Brent. Just so you know, this may be a new caller. I'm not sure, but just so you know, Brent, you may not be aware of this. We're doing habeas corpuses in family courts for people who have had their children taken away, and I think that's what this guy is talking about. He's had his children taken away. And he wants them to show the cause. Hey, you know, bring the body and show me why you have my children. So I think that's what
three judges. One judge retired in the middle of the case, denied. Uh-huh. Another judge filled in, and she just removed herself after 8 full days of trial. Now a new judge is on the case, and it's been over 2 years. The last ruling giving a grandparent status by the Court of Appeals, I think it was Judge Finer, the Chief Justice for New York's final decision, said that he gave grandparents a standing if the child resided in the grandparents' home for 24 months or more.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, what? So she created this by making a bunch of false accusations. But the original case was my son's mom had my son taken away on the neglect petition. I immediately filed for custody of my son. He denied both the petitions for custody, and then he retired. And but originally, I was not part of any neglect petition, and it says the title of the case is the county and the grandmother versus the mother and the father. So it's titled incorrectly right off the bat. Can I bring habeas corpus to the appellate?
Well, no, I see a little bit about what John, how he described it. If they're being held, imprisoned, if they can't go where they want to go, that's imprisonment. And if imprisonment is false, habeas corpus, I think, could apply, but it depends upon a lot of things. I don't have all the facts, so I can't really say whether I think it really does or not, but it sounds to me like, as a general proposition, again, if there's a false imprisonment, an imprisonment would be defined as somebody being held within a particular boundary. There doesn't have to be bars. There could be walls. There could be just fear. You know, if a policeman arrests you and says, stand right there in front of my cruiser, well, that's an imprisonment, and the same principle can be applied to children. By the way, imprisonment, the test of imprisonment and arrest, is often a subjective test. In other words, you don't look at external factors, you just ask the person, do you feel like you're free to leave? If you don't feel like you're free to leave, you're under arrest, according to our law, and in most places. Now, I can't speak for every place. I just know that's kind of a prevailing view in the area of false arrest, which also is likened unto imprisonment. A false arrest is a form of imprisonment. It's a subjective test to cap it off.
Yeah, let me pipe in here a minute. Hold on, let me just pipe in a minute.
Sure.
If you're seeking habeas corpus, you know, and you want to do a petition for a habeas corpus, you know, we have been
moved. It's been postponed
so long
to give her greater standing.
Okay, so listen up. What we've been doing that, but we've kind of put it on hold because we've been very busy and working in Oregon and doing a lot of things, and I haven't been able to put my attention to it. We did get an individual that's going to put the attention in it with Linda, who should be able to handle a few cases a week and should be able to help catch up with those cases that are going through. Now, that person had a death in the family, and so I know they're due back this week potentially, and we'll be talking with them to make sure they're going to take that position and do the necessary work to assist us in the paper writing and all this stuff. We have all the framework and everything ready. And I think, you know, I think we could do a few a week easily, maybe 5 or 6, but it depends on a lot of things. In any event, if you're interested in filing the papers and once we get back into this, we'll work your case through, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org, and on the right side, you'll see a frowny face, the upside-down happy face, frowny face, holding a sign saying help. Click on that, and make a few choices for the appropriate kind of case you have. In your case, it's family court. And fill out the paperwork. We have an application, you know, questions to be filled out there. And then also we'll give you some information on writing an affidavit. And once we get your paperwork in, someone will contact you, and then we'll move it along. But again, you know, the moving of this paperwork along is dependent at this point in time of getting the necessary help. And we do have someone, like I said, that's supposed to be helping us. We'll find out this week. We will make the announcement the next Monday on whether we're back in gear or not. And if we are, we'll have a special meeting maybe Tuesday or Wednesday. I forget what day we're doing it. I think we're doing it Wednesdays, I think we're doing it, at 4 p.m. So once we get back in gear, we'll have a Wednesday meeting. I will initiate that first Wednesday meeting, which will bring together those people who have paperwork in for the habeas corpuses and wants to ask questions and whatever the case may be, where we're at, what we're doing, and so on. We'll get into those details at that point. So hopefully that'll help you. Okay?
Hey,
Don, wait a minute. Yes. Daniel, I just think something needs bearing and clearing up here. Daniel, you're the father of the child. Is that what I understand correctly?
Correct, yes.
And the child was taken away from the mother due to neglect. And you were not
correct.
There. You had nothing to do with that, right?
Had nothing to do with me.
Okay, now.
But were allegations made with no proof.
Okay, so here, let me just clear
and
something.
Now, even as horrible as CPS is, CPS has completely advocated that I get custody of my son.
Look, let me finish my thought. Stop talking a minute, because what you have to understand is they're right. Not only are they advocating, but they've broken the law. Your first right is your property rights, and your first piece of property is your body. And as an extension of that, it is your offspring. They are your property because God
correct.
Has given
that's,
them
that's,
you.
That's not
and
correct.
They cannot take them from you arbitrarily and give them to anybody else unless they can prove that they're in danger with you. So make no mistake about it. Habeas corpus will work here. They've taken your property. People get all upset when
it's
you call
not,
your
no,
property.
No, you can't. You're just like slave. You can't call, even if it's your own child. You can't
call well, you need to
look under
again.
Liberty.
Somebody that files into court, he says, I'm filing for the return of my property. That's a legal term, and they know exactly what you're talking about. And if you don't put it like that, you're not going to get redress, because this is a property rights thing, and it's about your rights and your children's rights. And in place where God put them, that's the place they belong. They belong to you. Look at until they're 18, they're considered a minor. They're considered an imbecile or whatever they call them, an infant. They're considered not competent to speak for themselves until they get to a certain age. You need to do the speaking for them, and you have to articulate in a strong
something?
Manner your rights, and that's what this is
can
about.
Can I just explain one thing to you that I've looked into? Just like you said, you're not allowed to own another individual. Once they're born, they're a person. They have rights. Liberty.
It's
under the civil right of liberty.
Human rights. They have human rights, but you are.
They have a right to be raised by their parent.
Look at
they have a right to
be
raised by their
parent. They want
to
make the
liberty.
State the parent. They want to make the state the parent. See, that's a new world order thing. Oh no. Kids, they're not property. This is baloney. They're your property because God gave them to you. And if that bothers you, calling them property, the reason that
no,
we
it
call
doesn't
them
bother
property,
me. But if you say it that way, I've from what I've seen work in it's considered the case law says it's liberty. That it's a liberty.
Yeah, but
it's a God-given liberty for a child to be raised by their
Daniel,
parent and a parent to
Daniel,
be raised by their child.
Daniel. Listen to what Gerard has to say, and then, you know, you can disagree with it. That's okay. But the thing is nevertheless, you're responsible for that child until that child is old enough, or unless you do something that can legally be broken away from. But other than that, you are responsible. And if you don't step up, the state takes control. They do this all the time. They take control.
They already took control. They took control.
Exactly.
And gave it to the grandmother.
To
now the grandmother,
listen, Daniel,
she has her own.
Daniel, please listen. you need to step up and take that control back. If you want to help, we'll help you. We don't want to get too much into a case of this type on this kind of a program. It's not the appropriate place. We do have meetings that we'll reinitiate on the people who are having these kind of problems, which is Wednesdays at 4 p.m., but we haven't reinitiated them yet. Maybe next Monday we'll be able to reinitiate those meetings, and we'll be meeting on Wednesday. And but basically, we'll help you to get the right wording and the right paperwork into the courts to get the process going, you know, for the petition. And the petition will be directly to the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, who will then push it into the court for you. Because if you bring it into a judge yourself personally, they always throw it out, and people don't know what to do. We push it, we force it through the process. Now, of course, they resist us too, but they're getting weaker and weaker at it, and we've had a few successes in it, and we expect to have quite a few more successes in the near future on what we're doing here. But
where along the line did it actually say that the courthouse has a mechanism to select a grand jury? Is that criminal procedure?
I don't know. Well, that's just code that came up. I mean, that's not out of history. Maybe Brent could talk a lot better on that than I can. But
no,
you know,
Daniel,
you've asked a question. Let's try to get the answer to that. Okay. The bottom line is this: is that the legislature, working with the judiciary, and generally speaking, this whole thing, in my opinion, was put together by the bar, put together the necessary code or statutes in order for the courts to take the process up. How long ago and when that was done, that's another question. But the bottom line is that the courts have become so used to taking control of this that the judge and the prosecutor control either both the trial jury and the grand jury, and the sheriff has to go begging to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor may refuse even the sheriff from seeing the grand jury with a case. And it happened. It happened with us. We went to the sheriff to bring some cases against some judges. They were clear-cut cases. The sheriff agreed with it and said, okay, but we got to now go talk to the prosecutor. He had to go beg the prosecutor. And we went to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor said no, and the sheriff said there's nothing I could do. Now, there is ignorance in action. The prosecutor...
It happened to me. It happened to me. I went with an attorney. The judge right now in family court, because originally... Are you aware what 18B counsel is in the state of New York?
No.
That's a assigned counsel. If you can't afford an attorney, originally it said you have a right to legal assistance. Now it's representation. I'm not allowed to talk, and I'm told who is going to represent me.
Right, because you're considered an imbecile. You're considered, an imbecile in a court. You have a lawyer who's going to talk for you. Okay.
But we should move this on because we got a lot of people.
We could talk about this in the future. If you're interested, fill out the paper. You'll hear next Monday if we reinitiate things, and you'll be able to go to the appropriate platform for having this kind of a conversation. Okay?
No, John, I'm dedicating my life to making a change. I mean, it took having my right to be a father taken away for no good reason at all. But I've seen, what I see clearly is everything is twisted. The word attorney is to turn and twist.
Well, look, we will do everything we can to assist you if you want us to help you. And like I said, I believe we will be reinitiating this process next week. I'll let you know next Monday, and we'll see where we go. We'll be able to determine how many cases we can get through a week. And
so what happens if 25 people get together in a county in New York and say
it's still there. U.S. versus Williams.
Yeah, generally speaking, look, the grand jury comes up from the people, and it would be true, yes. If 25 people come up and examine a situation and want to do an indictment, in theory, they, of course, can do it. That's exactly what we're doing ultimately anyway. But we're trying to set the process up, get an education going, create a handbook for the administrations of the grand jury in order to be able to learn how to go through the process and deal with the paperwork, and also, orientating the grand jury and the trial trial jury, preparing them to come in into the court and recognizing who the king of the court and what, by what principles they need to act and consider their case for and so on. And we of course need to train these people to understand. They got to be very careful that they don't say anything to taint that jury, to drive the idea, the positions of these people one way or another on any case. Only bringing them the principles that they need to have in order to go in and do their job. And it's not that much. I mean, people don't really have to be educated to do this. Everybody understands what honor, justice, and mercy is, and that's the principles.
Exactly.
And everybody, look at the regular Joe out in the street is the guy that can sit down and listen with, 11 other people and can figure out what's really going on in most cases. And if they can't, then they'll have to just let him go. So we really don't know if the guy's guilty or not. And that's the system we have. It's a good system. And generally speaking, I think there's enough contradiction in any case when someone is guilty. It'll show up in the court and the people will know the right thing to do and they'll do it. And they'll do the best thing they can, which is much better than these people can do that have taken control of our process. So, but look, as far as anything else on your case, let us talk at another time. Wait till after next Monday, and then you can come to that next meeting. And but meanwhile, go fill out the paperwork. Get it going.
Yeah,
right there on the right-hand side, look for the frowny face with the help sign on the right side of our website, and click on it and fill out the paperwork.
Yeah,
okay.
One last question. Yeah, this has nothing to do with that. This has to do actually with what we're talking about, what discussion was about. The also common law grand jury is to ensure that elected officials or public servants are operating in accordance with the law. Now, Rule 1.6 of the Rules of Professional Conduct, which all attorneys subscribe to become a member of the bar. Every state has their own Rule 1.6 of the local rules. In New York, it was on December 16th, 2008. They had approved it in New York, and what it says it's a confidentiality of information is what it discusses, and it says that information in relation to representing a client is considered confidential. Now, listen to that and how it could be taken out of context. Information relating to the representation of a client is confidential. That means anyone in that courtroom, the judge, unless it's going to result in the furtherance of a crime, which once the judge commits the crime and leaves the courtroom, it's not a crime anymore. It's already done. It's not the furtherance. And if it's going to result in imminent death or serious bodily injury. So you, if you're an attorney and you're going to go against the Bar Association or a judge, you have to prove that it's going to result in the furtherance of a crime or it's going to result in imminent death or bodily injury.
I don't know, Brett, would you want to respond to that?
Well, I've never seen it done that way. I've never heard of that standard. I do know that...
the rules of professional conduct. That's how
well, that's not
it
the,
in
I'm just making a point that I've never seen it applied that way, and I have never... You know, there's two things a fellow ought to take into consideration. Number one, what are the rules of the law as they're written? And the number two, what is reality? How does this really work out? And they're seldom... always exactly the same. And that's all I'm saying. I haven't seen it done that way. I've seen fellows lose their law license without any crime having been committed. I've seen other people disciplined. In other words, suspended their license without any crime having been committed. But I'm not in New York State either. I think you said you're in New York, right?
Every state has the same exact rule, and it's all called rules.
No. Every state doesn't have the same rules. They all have different.
Rules,
they have
rules.
There's a fundamental set of rules called the Uniform Code, and then the states vary how they want with those rules, and they amend them and change them. But fundamentally, they're all the same. I agree with you about that, but they're all a little different. But no, I've never seen that.
Are we talking about the rules of professional conduct for attorneys?
Right. The rules of professional conduct. They're different. They're different in
every
state. Say again.
It's called Rule 1.6 in every state in the United States, all 50 states, and it's.
Well, that may be Rule 1.6 of the uniform rules, but the uniform rules are different in every state. They're not uniform, is what I'm trying to say. That's just
that
the rules that the American Bar Association puts out for states to enact if they want, and they do enact them, they always change them. And they continue to change them every year. What?
They take an oath to uphold the Constitution of the state, the Constitution of the United States, and the rules of professional conduct. That's the
right.
Problem.
And the rules of professional conduct according to that jurisdiction, whatever state you're in. Nobody takes an oath to uphold the rules of state of New York when they're in the bar in Malaya in California. They don't do that. Their loyalty is to the rules in the state where they are licensed to practice. And the federal jurisdiction, of course, that covers the whole country, but the variations between the circuits, too. So it's not just all over the country that way, no. It is, by the way, similar all over the country. That's true.
All right. We're going to move on. We've been on this caller for a while, and we'll just leave it there, and let's go to our next caller. If you want to take one or two more, Brent.
No, sure, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Next caller is Jody from Michigan. I'm not sure whether I got you. Let me just unmute you directly. Jody from Michigan, go right ahead. 810, Jody, J-O-D-I, from Michigan. You got the mic. Hello, Jody. Oh, maybe Jody's away from the mic. Let me just put them on hold for a minute. We'll go to the next caller. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, guys, is that Jody? Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was saying hello. You guys couldn't hear me.
No, we couldn't. Go right ahead.
Okay. All right. I'm right here with my question for Brent. I'm wondering, is guardianship would that be considered false imprisonment if you are put under guardianship through a court?
It would depend upon, and watch me close on this one, it depends on what the judge decides to do. And I can tell you what I thought about it. Of course, every case has to stand on its own facts. And if a guardianship has a fact that point to false imprisonment and you could convince a judge of it, yes. But you have to decide yourself. You look at the standard in your jurisdiction. I believe you said Wisconsin, didn't you?
No, Michigan.
Oh, Michigan. Oh, pardon me all the pieces. You just go to the internet and type in Supreme Court Michigan or Michigan courts and type in false imprisonment. Type in guardianship, start with false imprisonment, and see what you come up with. I'll bet someplace in the cases that you pull up, you'll see one of those courts, those appellate courts, will list the factors to consider whether or not there's a false imprisonment. But I do know this, it's not always what people think it is. And as I said a while ago, the fundamental rule in our common law is if you're being held within a boundary by force or threat of force, and subjectively you don't feel free to leave, you're falsely imprisoned. That's the general rule. But other facts may come into every case being different. That's why we have courts. The legislature or the Congress or the legislating body can't think of every possible set of facts to address. They try. That they shouldn't try. It's stupid, but they try. And that's why we have so much legislation and so many statutes, so much we don't know what to do. We're not supposed to do that. We're supposed to put out the general principles. For example, the Bible says the general principle is you're not supposed to steal from the other fellow. You're not supposed to take what is yours. He who takes what is his and shall pay the price or go to prison. That's the general principle. But then every situation has different facts. And it's up to the courts and the juries, depending upon the circumstance, to decide whether or not stealing really did occur. And in your case, you're talking about guardianship. You need to kind of get an idea what the standard is under the law in the state of Michigan, according to the appellate courts, mostly the Supreme Court, but other courts too. Just look it up on the internet. You'll be surprised what you find. You might even have a statute. The legislature may have taken it upon themselves to define false imprisonment. Imagine that's probably true. Look up statutes of your legislature. That's where the courts will start.
Well, that'll be interesting. I'll have to do it. I hadn't done it under false imprisonment, but I know that they've legislated a whole bunch of laws regarding this guardianship, but they're just calling it, pushing it under a label called being legally incapacitated, which essentially from what I interpret it is being made to lose your civil rights legally.
Well, so false imprisonment is not, the freedom from false imprisonment is not a civil right. It's a fundamental right given to men from God, and it goes to every one of us when we're born. And the reason God gives us that right, by the way, is to in furtherance of his covenant of man. His covenant for all of mankind, for all of Adam, is that man be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. That's the most fundamental job of mankind. And everybody can participate in it, but we are hindered in doing so if we're imprisoned falsely. That's why false imprisonment is a fundamental right, because it's from God and it's part and parcel to his covenants, his fundamental covenants, as are all of our rights, part and parcel. We cannot do our duty before God if those rights are hindered or hampered or taken away, or not taken away, but hindered or hampered. And that's what the evil empire is trying to do. False imprisonment is a big deal. And it's in every state. We have a non-criminal action against it. It's a tort. If somebody falsely imprisons you or arrests you, you can sue them criminally, and then a person can be prosecuted if it's a criminal matter. The government imprisons a lot of people, and they do it falsely, a lot. From arrest to regular imprisonment in prisons. But then you have, I'm here and now, I'm not involved in family law. I've done a few cases over the years when I couldn't get out of it, don't particularly like it. But I see now that this has become a question with custodianship. I'd never experienced that, but I quickly grasp what you're talking about. What you do, don't look up the word guardianship, look up the words false imprisonment, and then you ask yourself, do these standards, can I make what I'm dealing with and my facts apply to these standards of false imprisonment according to the law? Don't worry about the statute. See what the Supreme Court of your state has said, because everything in our common law tradition must conform to how the courts have applied it. That's why we're different from the rest of the world, by the way. And I recognize the courts, of course, quite a bit, but still that's what makes us different. We try to tailor, in America, we have the forms that allow us to tailor every decision to specific facts. That's not true in South America. They just let the legislature do it, and the judges are just clerks that support the legislation. And if your little set of facts don't fit into their legislation, they take a big sledgehammer and pound it in. Well, we try not to do that in America. God help us if our courts, well, we are getting that way. I could see that. But as long as we have juries and as long as we have judges that have some common law sensibilities, they will try to tailor their decisions. I've seen judges, I was in California recently in court, and I've seen judges work really hard at giving every case the special consideration, the facts of that. It was in family court, by the way. The special consideration the facts of that case require.
Yeah, my judge says the judge doesn't want to hear my case again. He's encouraging me to appeal it in a higher court. So I don't know how that would go, but they're also trying to further imprison me. They have plans that to house me in a hospital.
Do you have a lawyer or not?
No, I cannot get a lawyer to help me. I mean, I would have to have really big bucks to get a lawyer. You know,
Let me give you a name, and if this lawyer can't help you, this is in Michigan. And I'd referred a case to this lawyer on a couple other occasions, and her name is, and I forget what town she's in. I'll give you the name. You can look her up on the internet.
Okay.
Her name is Constance Cumby.
Oh, I've called her, yeah.
No, you know who I'm talking about. She couldn't take your case?
Yeah, no, I've talked to so many lawyers. I've even got lawyers telling me you've talked to a lot of lawyers. Nobody wants to take my case. It's messy, they say. I don't know why. I've talked to lawyers all over the state, and nobody wants to touch my case.
Well, And that goes to show, again, and I hear this a lot, lawyers are tired of going to court because they get beat up. Sometimes they get fined. Sometimes they get sent to jail just because the judge doesn't like their arguments. I've seen lawyers get fined. I've seen judges throw things at lawyers. There's little respect. There's little respect for lawyers, especially if they're criminal defense lawyers. And I have friends that have been disbarred from certain federal circuits. I have other friends in federal court that criminal defense lawyers that have been removed from the rolls. You get on the roll of the court and they appoint you to represent indigent people that don't have any money. Well, if you don't go along with a judge, or if you're hard to get along with, or you file papers, they get tired of your arguments. Sometimes judges do that.
The thing is, though, Brent, is that it's not a criminal case. They originally were trying to bring me up under false criminal charges, but I called them out on that. Now they're playing the mental health card game with me, and they got false diagnosis.
Jody, let me suggest to you also, okay, you know, we may be moving back very shortly into the habeas corpus, and it sounds like something, if they're trying to put you into a mental health frame type thing and take away your liberty by using that, we've seen it done a lot of times to a lot of people, and it's just a ploy from the court. And if you want our help, you know, go online on our site, nationallibertyalliance.org, on the right side, look for the frowny face. It's the upside-down happy face. He's holding up a sign, says help. Click on him and fill out the appropriate papers that you'll find there. And as soon as we get moving with habeas corpuses, we'll work with you on that. Because if you are in jeopardy of being incarcerated, imprisoned, you know, in any way, you know, even being put into a place where they're saying, well, you know, you got to be put here till we figure out if you're crazy or not. That's the same thing as being in prison. So we'll help you. So, again, you know, we're hoping to get things moving again in a week, within the week, we hope, as long as we get the necessary help. But
yeah, because they might be trying that next month. I've got my second one-year evaluation coming up, and I found out through a FOIA request that they were planning on injecting me against my will.
All right.
They didn't
tell
me though.
Fill out the paperwork and make sure you're here next Monday to see if we announce that we're reopening things. And then, you know, look at the people who get the paperwork done quickly and correctly, the fastest. Those are the paces we push through quickly. So,
okay.
You know. Okay?
You sound sane to me, by the way.
She absolutely does.
Thank you. Thank you.
No doubt about it, yes.
Yeah, it's try telling it to the judge. I think there ought to be a change of places there because he really sounds like he's insane.
Yeah. All right, Jody. Do what we say, and we'll see what we can do to help you out, okay?
Okay, yeah, thanks, John.
Okay, we're going to take one more caller for Brent, and then we're going to move over to Gerard. So the next caller, let's see, is a wireless caller. Maybe you can give us your first name and your state. It's a 719 area code. You should have heard. You've been unmuted.
Good evening, Mike. You're on Colorado. How are you?
Mike from Colorado. Good. Go right ahead. What's your question for Brent?
Sir. CPS intake for what will that do for my grandchildren? I forwarded it today along with the probate case.
Okay. You're talking about working out with us with habeas corpus to see if we would help you out with that? All right, well, you know, if you filled out the paper, next week we'll let you know whether we'll get that back in motion again, and then we'll have a meeting on the following Wednesday to discuss specifics on, you know, what cases are going forward. But most of the cases, we do take quite – look at it, if you're in jeopardy of being imprisoned, if you are imprisoned, or if your children have been taken away, those are the things we will assist you with habeas corpus. And so tune in next Monday to see where we're at with that. We will be getting back to it. I'm hoping to get back to it by next Monday. Okay. Meanwhile, go fill out the paper. Click on the frowny face. Get all your papers done. Get your affidavits done. Because as soon as we get back in, if your paperwork's ready, your case will move into gear. Okay.
One more question, if I may.
Yeah.
My daughter. What about that case? That habeas corpus they filed last week. Christina, you're wrong.
Okay, you'll have to, again, you'll have to listen in next Monday, and if we're moving forward, then you'll come to the Wednesday meeting, and we can converse. This is not a place for it, okay?
Okay, sure. Thank you very much.
All right, good night. Thank you. All right, Brent, I'll move things over to Gerard, and we'll look forward to some more teaching next week. I'll talk to you in the next day or so to maybe we'll get an idea of the subject matter, and I'd like to talk to you more about sheriffs, okay?
Okay, thank you, John. Bye.
All right, thanks, and you're welcome to stay, of course, and listen in. But okay, Gerard, you ready? You've got the mic. Just hit *6, Brent, so you're muted, okay? Gerard, you got the mic.
Okay.
Go right ahead.
It says
my fingers are off of the controls. As a matter of fact, I may walk away for 15 or 20 minutes or so, but you got it.
Okay, it says California Frank. You are unmuted.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I wanted to say something to Brent Winters, but I guess he hung up, or...
Well, if Brent, if you're still here, hit *6. What did you want to say?
A friend of mine, Connie, told me about this call, and I know you don't really talk about this stuff, but it kind of makes sense with what Brent Winters was talking about, which is slavery. We don't really have slavery these days, but there's modern-day slavery where they use technology to create surveillance so you have no privacy, and then harm you with electromagnetic frequencies or other types of radiation. So it really is like being a slave because you really have nowhere to go for safety.
That's true. No, yeah, it's curious from my perspective, and this is my narrow perspective, but I was on an aircraft carrier for a few years. The great danger on aircraft carriers was what we called RADHAZ, radioactive hazard, because of the power of the radars, and every airplane had a powerful radar on it. And I knew fellas that had all their hair burned off and all of their eyebrows and all of their whiskers, and of course, having left, and that's been 40 years ago, I don't know if they ever got any of that back. But it was dangerous because we were in a place where we couldn't escape. And so we tried to learn that we were taught certain things to do and certain things to avoid. But now there's so much of that stuff in the air, it's the same stuff, that we can't escape it here even in our own country. And now, of course, the powers that be, from what I hear, are using it against people. To solidify their power and to get information that puts us in a position of subservience. Now, I see that also. The principle, I'm quoting the Supreme Court from a 1925 case, the McPherson case, McPherson versus Buick Motor, I believe the name of the case, and the Supreme Court of the United States said this. They said that the principle of the law never changes. But the application of the principle is always a little bit different because it is a different set of circumstances, different set of facts, a different set of people. But the principle never changes. The principle that we call the right against slavery never changes. But the evil empire is forever creative in applying it using new technology. They used to tell us when I was a political animal in another life, I'm no longer in that life, they'd tell us that political technology dictates political success. And at that time, we had telephones. And we did have fax machines. They were new, but we had them. And if you didn't know how to use those things, you were hurting. Well, of course, the evil people used them too, but now it's much, much worse. But we have technology. I'm on a telephone call with several hundred people or a few hundred or something. There's quite a few. And that's good. That's technology we didn't have before. I'm also on the internet. I stream on the internet on radio around the world. It's not, even though those evil people are doing all these nasty things, we're not at a loss. And if we're not using this technology as best we can, we're fools. We can do it. And using the internet, getting the word out, using the telephone, learning what you can from the internet. I do that, and then I also say things and on the internet, on live stream, on the radio through the internet, and on the telephone call, you can do that. Don't think there's nothing you can do. There's a lot you can do, and we all need to be doing it and constantly doing it. The truth is, Disraeli was right. God rules by words, just by words. And his creatures, made in his image, do the same thing. And when he delegates duty to us, we govern by words. So let's get busy with what technology we have and use it. Even when you go into court, you got to use words. And it's not pictures, it's words that really move people. You can do that.
I agree with you, and I've been using the phone a lot to communicate with other people who say they've been hit with this electromagnetic fields and learning about shielding and ways that you can protect your body and things like that, even getting radiation meters and EMF meters. But it's interesting you brought up slavery tonight, because when this conspiracy with me first started, they had a big box that said slave on it right in front of me. And I think their intent 15 years ago was to enslave me and put me in the public eye, and now it's getting more violent where they're hitting me with these frequencies. So it's kind of like back in the, you know, slavery time with Lincoln, where they used to beat their slaves. And that's
well, I understand for certain that there's always been a conspiracy that those minions of the evil empire have always agreed to do evil. That's a conspiracy. That's the definition of conspiracy. And the evil empire and its minions and the devil himself have always, always worked hard to steal, kill, and destroy people. That is, to enslave them to their own evil lusts. The greatest danger you face, I face, everyone faces, is slavery to ourselves. That's the great danger. Because once the evil empire can get you to give in to your weaknesses, you're done. And that's what slavery is all about. It's important to worry about other people trying to do it, but more importantly, we all need to, number one, worry about the ultimate enslavement, and that's the enslavement to self. And that's what the evil empire and the minions of the evil empire try to work all of us into. They offer us everything. They offer us the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the vainglory of thinking you're somebody more than you are, the vainglory of life, as the Bible puts it. That's the great danger. And if we guard against that danger, the other danger, God will take care of.
But that's not what's happening to me. That's technology that's doing that. I've already talked to other women who had similar technology used on them from the perverted, satanic people that are up in power with the Illuminati or what have you, because I lived a very normal life until I was put into this program, and I had very normal functionality. All this
I stand by what I said. The greatest enslavement is to self, and the outsiders that come in to destroy you in the meantime, they're a great danger, but they don't hold a candle to the enslavement that the evil empire will work against yourself, and you can get your, that's what will destroy you ultimately, destroy all of us. Now that we can guard against the other things, but while we're guarding against them, then the evil empire will slip in and get us enslaved to ourselves. That's the danger.
Well, I follow God, and I follow the Ten Commandments, and I use biblical verses to fight, and I follow everything that's good and moral and upright and ethical, and I'm not dating anyone. I'm not even going to do that, because I don't believe it's in God's eyes it's a good idea unless I'm married. And they prevented me from getting married and having children. They did that on purpose.
Well, I know that they're out, those guys, whoever they are, and I met some of them, but I don't know all of them. Yeah, there are people out there that are vicious and dangerous. I know what you're saying, and I'm glad you're able to work against it. But
on the Word of God. I do. I stand on the Word of God, and I do everything in God's eyes that's ethical. That's what I do. I do what's right.
Right. One of the other ways you can also help fight against this is to work with us here at National Liberty Alliance and get the word out to the Liberty groups. To work together to support the sheriffs and to support the juries, to bring in the common law back into the courts and the control by the people. That's something we can all do. And, of course, we have to protect ourselves in any way we can with anything that is, endangering our health or our psychological makeup, our psychology. So, anyway, We should move on to the next caller. We appreciate the call. And what was your name again?
My name is Lauren. My name is Lauren.
And you're from California?
Yeah, I'm from Southern California, right near, well, south of L.A. L.A. is where a lot of this started. I was living in Northern California, but Hollywood is what really started this with me. And I feel like I am being held like a slave, and my family is part of it. They know that this is happening to me. But I'm an adult.
Well, Lauren, we do appreciate it, and we do agree with you in many different ways. You know, they are treating us like slaves. They're listening into our conversations. We know that. They're here tonight with us. They've been with us for quite some time now, and hopefully we're changing a lot of minds of the people that are listening in on us that are their minions, and hopefully they'll become one of the people again. You know, let's all do the best we can to continue on, to stay healthy and safe, and also to go forward to do whatever it is we can do to bring back common law and to bring back the principles of God into the court. And if we get the principles of God into the court and into the hearts and the mind of the people to apply these things, then we will be doing the same thing to our entire judicial system and all three branches of government, and then we'll have the nation that our founding fathers envisioned and hoped that we would once meet get to. So, okay? Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Gerard? Thanks. Thank you, Lauren.
Okay, Gerard, go right ahead. I'm going to mute up so you can take control. If you need Brent and if he's here, that's fine. But other than that, I'm muting up for a while, and I'll be in and out for a short.
Yeah, I've been dropping a lot, so just beware.
Oh, okay. Let's see, who else is here? If Gerard drops off, I could pick up.
Yeah, I just signed back in probably 8-10 times in that conversation.
Oh, okay. I better not walk away. I'll just run for water. Go right ahead.
Robert's there. I just heard him.
Okay. All right, well, I'll hang in, too. I'm just going to run for water, but go ahead.
Okay. Next question. It looks like from the 720 area code 7080, give us a name in your state, and you've been unmuted.
Hi, this is Lindsay in Colorado. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I'm going to grab Jessica Edgar. She's LaVoy's niece, and she just wanted to talk to you guys tonight. So
oh, very good.
Give me just a second.
Yeah. We'd love to hear from LaVoy's niece.
She's reading her kiddos a book, Goodnight. So.
Oh.
But we really wanted to talk to you guys tonight. While we're waiting for her to get on, Jessica and Kelly from Oregon did a radio show today. It's on Blog Talk Radio. It's archived as Stand By Me for Action, so we definitely want everyone to listen to that. It's a lot of great information and kind of what we're doing on our side, and kind of using National Liberty Alliance as our tool to give our people and our group something to do. We have started a courtroom observer training for Nevada, and we already have the one in Oregon set up. It's been set up for a while. So let me grab Jessica, and I'll put her on for you.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, everybody.
How you doing, Jess?
I'm doing okay. I was actually in the middle of reading a book to my kiddos. I'm going to make Lindsay take over. We're right here. Okay, sorry. We're reading Rush Revere. I'm teaching my kiddos about pilgrims and how we began. So I was not listening to the call because I was trying to get the kiddos to bed. And so I know that I wanted to jump on and just kind of talk to everyone about Stand By Me and what we're doing. The website is absolutely amazing. You can find a lot of information on how to get involved, and we are working with National Liberty Alliance to get all of the courtroom observers trained and get people within those courtrooms to record. So please visit the website. It's www.nationalstandbymeforliberty.com.
Say that again slower. I missed it. Say
sure.
www.what?
NationalStandByMeForLiberty.com.
Okay, so StandByMeForLiberty.com.
Yeah. National
right.
StandByMeForLiberty.com.
Right.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yep, and so you can find a lot of ways to get involved there, but tomorrow we need people in Oregon, and so we put out a call to action today to ask people to please show up and to stand and demand that those patriots be treated fairly and they have due process in that trial. And so we are really just hoping that we can encourage people to get out there and stand with these guys. We want people there. I think seeing people unite is going to bring more people together, and that's what our goal is with Stand By Me, is to have all groups and all liberty causes uniting, because the root of all of this is our Constitution not being followed. And so
has there been any word? Has there been any word on the motion to keep them in Oregon? Was that denied, or?
You know what? I have not gotten that from Kelly. You know, from Kelly, if they denied the motion to keep them.
Because tomorrow's the last day. I think that they're going to be there. Otherwise,
they find out tomorrow. As far as I know,
they find out tomorrow. Okay, so everybody, look at that's why they need. Everybody needs to show up there, because the government judges what they do to us by the response that we give them. Look at, they're testing us all the time. And so what you're doing out there by the jail and in Portland, believe me, they take notice. And so everybody should really, really make that show of force.
Yes, I agree. We need to get as many people out there as possible. So at 9 a.m., Kelly will be out there on the stairs and waiting for other people to show up. I'm sorry.
So anybody local that's listening to this call, or even if you want to get in your car and drive, it's very important to get people to this. Kelly told me a very touching story about how when she did her first rally out there, everybody was saying, why didn't you go to the Capitol? And she said that they could hear you guys through the prison walls, and they were going, Ammon, Ammon, your people are here. She said it was very uplifting for them. So we should take a lesson from that.
And then it's true. I actually got to speak to one of the political prisoners as well, and them just knowing that we are out here every day fighting for them and for our kids' freedoms alone, you know, they are, it encourages them to stay strong. And they are offering them, you know, plea bargains and things like that, and they don't want to take that. They don't want to, you know, take a plea for something they aren't guilty of. And so we, as long as we're encouraging them, we're going to keep them on the right track and get them at the help that they need.
Yeah, that's one of the ploys that they'll do. They'll offer a plea bargain, especially when they have a weak case. And you know, they're...
And they do have a weak case, really.
They obviously do. But, you know, they're evil. They're evil, and they won't stop at anything. But, you know, this is the point of the spear that everybody has to stand strong on now, because this is their push to get rid of the Constitution and the Patriots and try to vilify all of us. So, you know, this is the new battle of the bulge here, so to speak. You know, it's like it's there in Oregon. So everybody should go ahead and support you. I think you're doing great work.
Well, thank you, and we're going to continue to do this. And if for some reason these men are still moved to Nevada, we need people in Nevada right away. And we are training courtroom observers, you know, now. So we need the forces. We need the people to stand up. We need the public opinion, and we need to get out there. We need to tell people the truth, and that's the only way we're going to do it, is face-to-face. No more on your computers chatting with each other. We've got to get out there. Got to talk to the public.
Absolutely. And like, look at anything that we put out, anything that we fax, people should print that out. If you're in a position to talk to your sheriff, like some people are intimate with their public officials. You know, if you have a mind to, you don't want to be disrespectful for anything or anything. You want to put a good foot forward, but you should grab our stuff and say, have you seen this? Talk to him about the paperwork. And a lot of times, I mean, you don't know if somebody's grabbing that fax and he's never seen it. So bring it up to him and say, well, I have a copy for you. You see, that's how we can all help each other get this word out between, you know, like even if you have something, you bring it over here, you announce it, tell us where to get the resources, and everybody should go out in the public, in the streets, to their officials, and disseminate this information, ask questions, call.
We do have sample letters and things also on the website there is a get involved page. And mm-hmm. there are different ways to get involved in every community. And we have sample letters that you can write to your officials and representatives of your state and sheriffs and all kinds of things, too, to make them a little more personal. So you can use those resources that we have there as well. We also are doing prayer requests all over the nation, and I think that'll help us get this out to the public. Imagine every congregation in your town or your county saying a prayer and listing every political prisoner by name in that prayer. It's going to get people thinking. That's 20-something political prisoners that they're going to have to list off in that prayer request. And we have a printed prayer request that we have circulating that we're asking people to send out to their churches. So we can get you that information as well.
Stand By Me movement is doing such wonderful work. All I can say is God bless all of you.
Thank you.
Okay, did we lose Gerard here? I think we lost Gerard.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I'll pick up from here. Okay, I appreciate the call. I heard a part of what you were talking about. I had to walk away for a short period, but anything else to finalize before we move on?
Okay, I just got back.
Oh, Rod's back. Okay. All right, we're just finishing up with your last caller, so any final comment or whatever? Gerard, you got it?
Okay, I got it. Are you still there? Is she still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. So anyway, it's good to talk to you. Feel free to come back and keep us up to date on what's going on, and we'll work back and forth. And, you know, the Courtroom Observers is very powerful. You know, the call-outs are very powerful because we that case we had in Utah, everybody called the courts. They called the jail. They called the judges. They said, please stop calling. They were begging us to stop calling. They had so many calls. And that's when the judge got on there and completely reversed himself when they were calling us terrorists and a terrorist organization. And that's why they wouldn't give him bail. And he said, you know, I've had a lot of calls, he said, and I don't see any Al-Qaeda here. He said, what I see is concerned Americans. It made a difference. He got worried. And that they don't operate in the light. Well, actually, they operate well in the light, you know. That's when they become good, when the light's turned on. So we do have the ability to press that upon them, and we need to use that. Also, if Carl was on here, I would bring him up because he has this bill that was drafted up by Madison and Jefferson, and it's something to do with Congress overstepping their enumerated rights and overspending, and it has arrest powers. And look at they implemented it. They drew it up in I don't remember if it was I don't know if it was 1779 or 1800 or something like that. But already they knew that the judiciary and Congress were going to overstep their bounds. And this bill gets put in by legislators. It gets put in each state. And what he wants to do is he wants to implement calls to the legislators. And somebody told him that when they get calls at the Capitol, the legislators, if they get five people that can articulate an issue that are activists, they're scared. Five people translated to something like 5,000 people on phone calls. And they told him that if they get five people consistently like that, that they know they have to vote for that bill, or they will not get back in the next election, and it has a big effect on them. So he wants to have 20 people call all at the same time, you know, on the same day, and let all of those phones in the Capitol ring off the hooks, and push this legislation. Tell them they have to do it. If they don't do it, you're not going to vote for them next year. You're going to actually campaign against them. If that bill can go in like that, that's a good example. See, that's grassroots. That's even on the state level. I mean, we don't usually tell people to play politics, but this is something that will work. Now, listen, they already got it passed in one house in New Hampshire. So anybody that's in New Hampshire, I would think that that's the first state that you should start in, because if they already got it in one house, you know. So this is a very powerful thing. I don't want to, you know, Carl knows all the particulars. He's sending me the bill so I can look at it. Can you imagine a bill that was drawn up by Jefferson and Madison? I mean, those are the two giants of the Constitution. And they saw it necessary. And how come this thing hasn't been implemented in 250 years? Because they're afraid of it. That's why. So that's just an example of what we could do. So thank you very much. Any other things before I let you go?
No, that's all I've got. I wanted to make sure everyone knows about the community. Please join the Stand By Me community page and check out whatever events are going out on. I mean, I have everyone that we have found in the country so far. There are so many more, but we have them all in the event tab.
Hey, give your website one more time in case people didn't
know. Sure.
Yeah,
it's www.nationalstandbymeforliberty.com. And it's all spelled out.
Thank you very much.
And then I want to use NLA as a resource tool for town hall meetings and for our rallies. And one thing I'm hoping is that I can get a list of constitutional speakers that would be willing to go to town hall meetings and rallies near them to help us educate the public. And so I was hoping that maybe you guys can help me get a list of people that would be willing to go speak and teach the Constitution.
Yeah, we definitely can help you with names of people that do that. And you know, Brent is another one here that now you've heard him speak. And I'm sure if you got something going on, you know, in his area, he'd be willing to do it. And there's other ones that we can suggest. And
One of the ideas that we have with Stand By Me is, you know, it's a law in every school that they are supposed to teach the Constitution the week of September 17th. It's the Constitution week. And we would like to go into every middle and high school in our areas and hand out copies of the Constitution and hopefully have speakers in most of the schools holding assemblies for these children to teach them about our Constitution. So that's another thing that we're all working on, trying to do, contact our schools and the principals and getting them on board with that for Constitution Week in September.
That's great. If you can get in there, that would be great, because I know that, they don't
teach. We're definitely going to try.
Yeah, and the other thing you run into is the ones that are teaching it, they're teaching it wrong. They're telling them that you get your rights from the government and stuff like that. So that's really important that we get in there and turn that tide back around the other way.
Sometimes I agree.
They're the hardest.
And to get the pocket constitutions, if you contact your members of Congress, they're supposed to be able to give you like 100 of them to each person that requests them.
Yeah, and I think that they actually give them to the schools for free. So if we can get the schools on board, we'll be having the schools order them, but otherwise,
They'll give them to you free also if you ask them.
Yes, yeah. I just know that they'll give the schools a lot more. We have everyone in the Stand By Me community contacting the Congress to get those. So a lot of people are getting those free, which is great, and handing those out at their rallies. So
that's great.
Okay, thank you very much. So I'll move to the next caller now, if we're done. It looks like California Frank.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, this is Tammy from Connecticut.
Tammy from Connecticut. How you doing?
Great. Listen, I think the speaker today, Brett, is doing an amazing job. His experience, his knowledge is just amazing. And, you know, now that they're streamlining things so much and making it difficult and making people dumb down, someone like Brent and his knowledge is just really, really, really important to me tonight. And, you know, I want to show my respect to my elders, you know, in this call right now, because too many people with knowledge are being, you know, snuffed out. And so I just want to say thank you, number one, to him. And also I wanted to state that in the state of Connecticut right now, there's a lot going down, and about 2,000 people of the state of Connecticut are going to be losing their jobs with the state. The governor is trying to get, he's trying to get his rights to terminate people at the high level.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to bring that. So I hope that people are going to be watching what's going on in the state of Connecticut. And
Isn't your state the one that doesn't have any sheriff? Isn't Connecticut the state?
Exactly. I wanted to point that out as well.
Oh, boy.
Now, National Liberty Alliance really helped me out when I was falsely accused and imprisoned, and also habeas corpus was buried. And those persons should be held accountable for what they did. And I also put in a color of law file with the FBI, which they wouldn't accept the color of law on this whole matter. In other words, people are being turned away from doing their, civil rights that they have, even with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So I wanted to bring that to light with the National Liberty Alliance, and I can't be more thankful to the National Liberty Alliance, and I get people involved with it, try to get them to learn more about their rights, and I think it's a great website. The only thing I wish it was a little bit bigger on the website would be the sad face there. Got to pull that more into the middle. It's really a very busy website. You have to really kind of, it's really difficult for maybe, someone who's not savvy on a website. So
yeah,
I wanted to point that out.
We've been talking about putting some kind of a site map and massaging it. It's just that we've been so busy with everything else that we haven't really been able to massage the website. It does need some massaging. I mean, you can, once you get to know where it is, but to send somebody in there to find a specific thing, you can get lost because it is so massive. And
We do have a committee working on a proposal of making things easier and proposing how to restructure the categories, subcategories, and create a map. So that should be coming up soon. And
right. We're also going to support the committees of safety, and we'll have resources for them to pull off there, like PowerPoints and things like that. And it'll make a central place for them to get information so they're all uniform. And Matthew's going to be helping us with that. So we got a lot of things coming up. And the committee is a safety, which is a great thing about them. You talk about town hall meetings. As a committee of safety meeting is like a town hall meeting with no town board there. You see, they're all beholden to each other. And there's nobody that, how the town board meetings could go. When you have a tyrannical board, they shut you up. They don't let you talk. They ask the police to remove you from the meeting. That doesn't happen at a committee of safety meeting, That's the people getting together, and that's powerful, and that's one of the reasons they're scared of it. So we're going to help facilitate those things coming in off our website, where people will be able to get the education. And, don't forget to tell them to take that Constitution course and the civics course, because if they take that, they're going to know more than 99% of the people out there, and you're going to really understand it, and you're going to live it and breathe it and sleep it, and that's important.
Well, I got to tell you, I think with the governor here trying to get executive orders to terminate people at the top, I know that 154 of them are the first off the list of 2,000 people being terminated is with the correctional centers here in Connecticut. To have the crimes that are going on here, and just like the person in Michigan, where really they're trying to take away her freedom of speech when they want to use the Trump card of the mental game that they're playing here. They're trying to take her freedom of speech away, and then, of course, everyone gets immunity that has anything to do with her whole case. And bringing this to light, and women and people imprisoned being medicated, and then their whole life can be all wrapped up, years and years trying to get their life back, their livelihood being robbed from them. And just really, I think it's because, you know, we're in a financial crisis in the country, and the people at the top, they don't want to be homeless. So they'll do anything they can to stay at the top at the expense of our great country, and that's the biggest disgrace. In my opinion, if the good Lord finds it that it's time for you to, you know, learn to appreciate what you have, and you find yourself without a job and you lose your home, the good Lord's going to, you know, bring you back stronger. You have to trust God. And I'm just so grateful for the National Liberal Alliance, like I said, because I don't have any resources right now. I have the grace of God on me every day. But I know that He's going to give me prosperity at some point. And to be quite honest with you, I do want to fight my case right till the end, because these persons should be held accountable for destroying people's lives. And I'm counting on National Liberty Alliance, because I still, even with everything that happened to me, with me, the phone calls and everything is what got me released with a recrimination of a buried habeas corpus. And those persons, I believe, are running scared. And to have the FBI, when I have a document, a secret document, that even, really, if I got pulled over by a policeman at this time, they could try to use that same trump card on me and endanger my life with a false document that's not even signed by anyone. But that's what they used as probable cause. But as my case was thrown out, dismissed, even the attorney said there was no recourse for me, but there is, and I have all the evidence that nobody wants. The Federal Bureau of Investigation doesn't want all my credible fact evidence, turning me away from a COL, color of law, form, which brings it into the federal, you know, takes all those persons and holds them accountable with the 18 UCS codes.
You can still do that, and that's coming, and it'll be much easier. You know, once we get in the courts, it'll be much easier to push that through. You know, and like you said, they are feeling the pressure, and they are running scared, and the next thing you're going to see is they're going to start throwing each other under the bus. We've seen some of that already, because now they realize...
With no sheriffs in Connecticut. So everybody's running around with their chicken, like with their head cut off. That's exactly what's happening here, and no one knows where to go to, even, you know, to get an official person to listen. And so that's why I'm grateful so much for your website. You guys really are helping people, and I hope that woman in Michigan will fill out the information, because really they're just taking her away her freedom of speech, and that's just, it's going on rampantly across the country.
Yeah,
I think it's a protocol that they're using. They have a certain protocol. I don't necessarily know what it is, but that's how they're. And to have the courts are actually tampering with the documents. I've got all the fact evidence. The court documents.
Yeah, they change the transcripts and look it, and they do have their protocols, but what they're not good at is they're not good on their feet when they become stymied in one of the things you're doing, then they don't know what to do. Then they make stupid mistakes trying to cover up. Look it, when you have court watchers there who are taking notes that give affidavits at the end of the court, What are they gonna do with that transcript? They're gonna change it. You know what I mean? They're gonna create a discrepancy between the transcript and the court watchers that were there, 2, 3, 4, 7, 10 of them. You know, they have a problem when court watchers show up. As a matter of fact, Robert Bristow, who's on the call tonight, had an experience where he was in the court, and I don't know what kind of case it was, but when the prosecutor saw that he was there and he had his National Liberty Alliance court watcher badge on, the prosecutor said to the judge, he said, I have a problem with this case. And he says, we have a court watcher here, and I don't know if he mentioned us by name or not, but he said, and I think it would be in the best interest of the state to drop the charges. And that's exactly what they did. So they're so worried. they let this guy go. They didn't even want to mess with him because they understand that there's a power of people behind National Liberty Alliance. The word's getting out. And people go, I want to see the cases you won. That's a case we won right there. You're not going to be able to look that up in the court to see where it was. Look, this is the people coming together. And you heard the language of the papers that we filed. If they actually read that stuff, they should be nervous because nobody talks to them the way we do because we speak constitutionally and we speak the words, you know, that our forefathers spoke. We use biblical principles. They don't know what to say. They don't, you know what I mean? It just knocks them off center. So that's it. And we should move on. We're getting a little long here, but any last remarks?
Can I make one statement on foreclosures that are going on in Connecticut? What they're doing, in my opinion, is I've actually looked at some documents because I actually am an advocate for people. And what they're doing is putting it in mediation where some of these documents are not even legal, like affidavits that are not signed. And so the judge, of course, doesn't want to take responsibility for any of that. So they put it in a mediation situation. I told the individual, I said, take this one document that's an affidavit with no signature, circle it, make four copies, one for the bench, one for the judge, one for the clerk, and one for yourself. And that document alone will probably get your whole case canceled because they're using veterans benefits. I think at the top, they're stealing all the veterans benefits that the people are supposed to be getting. Here you have a veteran going to lose his home when you have a document stating that they've checked the records and that he's not really showing up as a active military person. The affidavit isn't even signed. How can that be legal? And, of course, the judge doesn't want to put his hands on it, so they use a mediator so that he never has to see any of these false documents. That's the biggest fraud you got going on right now that I'm seeing.
Right.
And it's terrible. So I just wanted to point that out. I think what it really boils down to is they're stealing all the money at the top, making frivolous cases of these that no one's ever going to see because they're probably going to hit the garbage can. But they stole your house, and everybody got away with all the money at the top. And you're left for the streets. And people that are over 60, you know, veterans, I mean, this is a disgrace. This is a moral disgrace. And I just wanted to mention these mediations that it's a secondary system. It's not even a legal system.
Yeah, right. They have no authority. They're administrative and they have no authority. But you know, when you follow them and you pay attention to them, then that's how they gain their control.
Their win. Their false win of everything. Yeah. Okay, big shout out to Brent. Brent, you're an amazing man. You've got a lot of history, a lot of sound information that you're trying to help us with. We need more like you. And I hope the good Lord chastens those that took away the voice of our senior people who have the knowledge, and they just, you know, they're just taking their voices away. So God bless everyone tonight.
Thank you. God bless you, too, and we appreciate you. Okay.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Okay, next caller. It looks to be, I'm going to put my glasses on here. It says Ralph and Chris from Missouri. Are you there? You've been unmuted.
Yes. Matter of fact, we are. Where I am, Chris has gone to bed. But, and I should be there myself. I'm a self-employed carpenter. And
it's a little late on the East Coast, yes.
yeah. So I've been I'm a member and a monthly donor. In fact, I've even, got rid of some, I mean, I've unplugged my cable TV. I'm on Amish TV now. and what I call Amish TV, I get 10 channels, you know, by air.
Yeah, right.
With a $30. But anyway, I'm taking a lot of that money and I'm giving it to you guys. And I'm trying to make more money to give to you guys every time I get a chance. So, I know that, John, about 3 weeks ago, he mentioned that somebody had called into the Alex Jones show, and every time somebody called in, it just seemed like that a lot more people were attending or, you know, getting a lot more response. So, but anyway, in the last 3 weeks, I've been able to get through to the Alex Jones show and promote National Liberty Alliance. You know, at least give that website address to his listeners. So I'm hoping that that's helping. There's some other, the old Derry Brownfield show, which is, you know, Derry's dead now, but now it's the Common Sense Coalition. His Gary sidekick took over the show here in Missouri, and I've been on her show. You know, and she's had Richard Mack on her show, and she's been to meetings with Richard Mack. So she's decided that she's going to look into this and talk to Richard Mack and the CSPOA and all that. So, but anyway, but here, and I feel like this is peanuts. But when I called in last week, I asked John. I told him that I had been charged with the DWI. And he said, we're so busy with Oregon, which I understand. He said, but you can go to the frowny face and fill out, you know, find the appropriate link, fill it out. And if and when we have time, we'll be glad to try to help you with it. Well, I went there, but there's nothing there. I don't know where to go because there's nothing for traffic. This is a traffic violation, a DWI. So I don't know which form to fill out. I don't know if you can help me there.
Traffic violation, you know, DWI is considered criminal. I don't know exactly if there's it's like a criminal case. So I'm sure there's something there, you know,
I'm not unlawfully prisoned.
You are, though. You are unlawfully prisoned. But, you know, you're right. You know, you're not going to. Well, we've used habeas corpuses like Brent says, it's a matter of do they have you in their custody? Are they making you come back? They absolutely are. They're telling you that right. You have to show up for this and that. You're in prison, buddy, whether you know it or not, you know? And it's just a matter of them banging that gavel before they put you in their actual prison.
That's probably the place.
3 minutes.
To fill out the information.
Exactly. That's what I would do. You can habeas corpus out, you know what I mean? And like the caller said, a lot of times they do that stuff without any sworn affidavits. I mean, their procedure really stinks. They don't hold to their own statute. So that's what I would,
Okay. Yeah. And I've been in the middle of taking the civics course and I finished the civics course. I was in the middle of the constitutional course. And I went back in to do the next class, and it's gone. And
really?
I've been in contact with Kathleen, and Kathleen, bless her heart, is trying. She said she couldn't find it either, so she turned it over to somebody else. I'm sure that she'll be getting back to me. But
so that was the Constitution course you had trouble with?
I finished the civics course, was fine. The Constitutional course, you know, I went back in to do the next class. And none of my records are there. Everything's gone for some reason. So, but anyway, Kathleen's working on that.
I'm sure she's talking to Carl or to Gary for that. We'll have to see what we can do. Hey, thank goodness it was a constitutional course and not the other one.
Yeah.
2 minutes.
And then, you know, Brent made that comment earlier that the greatest enslavement is to self.
Right.
And
right.
A comment that I heard one time was that I'll never forget. Is the greatest prison that a man can live in is the fear of what other people think. And it's true. I mean, you know, you're worried about what are they going to think? Bring up the fact that, you know, what those chemtrails are up in the sky, or, you know, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
And, you know,
look at my mother, God bless her soul, who was way ahead of her time. You know, she knew what the Council on Foreign Relations was. She was a John Birch member.
1 minute.
And she grew up worried about what other people think. And I think that they taught people that. You know, everybody's so worried about scandal. You know, eventually what happens, you end up making the own scandal you're afraid of that you're trying to prevent. You're making it up yourself after a while. Because you're so worried about what people think, you're not making the right decisions. So I get that idea completely. And thank you. I guess we're going to have to go now. Thank you for your comment.
Yeah, we've come to the end of the program. Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate. Yep. Appreciate everybody coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. We'll be back next Monday and bring more information. And again, everybody needs to get involved and join up with the federal district leaders there, and let's build up our counties, build up our states, and let's get into the courts. Okay, thanks again for everyone for coming. Good night, everybody. Thanks.
In my brain, change.